This is the IE America Radio Network News Break, your significant news source.
This is Don Waller in New York. Two American soldiers were killed when their Abrams battle tank was damaged by resistance fighters, U.S. officials said Wednesday, as the number of U.S. soldiers killed in combat since major fighting ended topped the wartime total. In a separate attack, seven Ukrainian troops were wounded in the first ambush of a multinational unit in the Polish sector south of Baghdad, coalition officials said. The latest deaths bring to 115 the number of American soldiers killed in combat in Iraq since President Bush declared an end to major fighting May 1st. Defense Department figures show 114 U.S. soldiers died in the active combat phase, which began on March 20th. On May 1st, after a dramatic tailhook landing in a Navy jet, George W. Bush stood on the deck of the aircraft carrier USS Abraham Lincoln under a banner reading "Mission Accomplished" and proclaimed victory in Iraq. That declaration has proven premature given the continuing attacks on U.S. soldiers and other targets in Iraq, and every aspect of the president's appearance on the carrier has provoked intense criticism from Bush's adversaries. Yesterday, Bush disavowed responsibility for part of that appearance, saying that the "Mission Accomplished" banner was the work of the carrier crew. However, according to a May 15th New York Times article, the banner was one of many details attended to by Scott Sforza, a former ABC producer who was hired by the Bush campaign. Sforza and his staff were on board the Abraham Lincoln for days prior to Mr. Bush's landing and supervised every aspect of the photo op, including the banner. Most Ground Zero workers still suffer from health problems 2 years after September 11th, and many do not have health insurance or job security, doctors told a congressional panel Tuesday. Workers testified at a Manhattan hospital before the committee, saying they had trouble breathing and no longer had the strength to do their old jobs. More after this.
Our national parks have always been there for us, standing as silent reminders of who we are and what it means to be an American. They are full of history, of memories, of majesty. But now these great American treasures need our help. I'm Richard Dreyfuss, asking you to help preserve America's national parks. Visit AmericansForNationalParks.org today, because there's just too much to lose.
This is a public service announcement from Americans for National Parks and this radio station.
Most blacklists are designed to intimidate, but thousands of Americans are clamoring to join one drawn up by the National Rifle Association. Actor Dustin Hoffman was so dismayed to find his name missing from the NRA's 19-page blacklist that he wrote to the powerful pro-gun lobby group begging to be included. As a supporter of comprehensive anti-gun safety measures, I was deeply disappointed when I discovered my name was not on the list, Hoffman wrote in a letter to the NRA. For IE American Network News, this is Don Waller in New York.
This has been the IE America Radio Network News Break, produced by TakeBackTheMedia.com. For more information, visit IEAmericaRadio.com or TakeBackTheMedia.com.
Does Burger King have a new fire grilled chicken baguette sandwich waiting for you? Unfortunately, no. Each one is freshly made to order without waiting for anyone. Like our Santa Fe chicken baguette with juicy fire-grilled chicken, fire-roasted peppers and onions, and a hearty fire-roasted tomato sauce on a fresh-baked baguette, all with only 5 grams of fat. Order your own Santa Fe chicken baguette from Burger King. Come on over. The fire's ready. Not a low-sodium food. For complete nutritional info, visit BurgerKing.com.
Tom DeLay, the loopy majority leader of the U.S. House, didn't have enough to do in Washington, so in his spare time, he's become the new czar of Texas. He swept into our state capitol early this year with a brand new scheme to redraw the boundary lines of our congressional districts. Never mind that redistricting had already been done just 2 years ago by a bipartisan panel of judges. Tom doesn't have any patience with bipartisanship, though. He didn't like those old lines because, he whined, the people just weren't electing enough Republicans to Congress. So Tom took charge of our state government, drawing a new map with congressional districts rigged to eliminate 6 to 8 Democrats. In a silent coup, he even shipped our inept governor out of state so he wouldn't get in the way while Tom himself was browbeating legislators in back rooms to force out his new map for Texas congressional seats. No Democrats were consulted, and no public hearings were held. The little czar simply ruled. And what a map he drew. It's filled with districts that look like U-turns, curlicues, squiggles, and snake trails. Take my town of Austin, which DeLay hacked up into three convoluted districts. This effectively leaves our state capital as the only one in the country with no U.S. representative of our own. Instead, we're now in a Houston district, a San Antonio district, and, in a tribute to the art of gross gerrymandering, a Rio Grande Valley district that looks like a Picasso snake running for 350 miles all the way from Austin to the Mexican border. It's bizarre. For example, the Tavern, a local restaurant, is in the Houston district, but its parking lot is in the San Antonio district. The University of Texas football stadium is in the San Antonio district, but its baseball field, right across the street, is in the Rio Grande Valley district. This is Jim Hightower saying, Tsar Tom is out to Sovietize our political system.
Hear that Doug made his confession that he used hair color.
Yeah, I was expecting to make it the treatise of the last month. Aren't you guys sweet?
I would recommend sticking with one color, however. Each month, you know.
I want to see you try the afro stuff.
Yeah, right. I'm going to do that.
I decided that it is not the color of the hair, but the head that it stuck to that's important.
Doug Stephens, good day.
On the IE America Radio Network.
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
Patriots from coast to coast, this is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network, broadcasting live on radio stations from California to North Carolina, from Illinois to Florida. Well, the list goes on and on. Anyway, and beaming down from the depths of outer space on the Sirius satellite radio system and streaming across the world on the Internet on the IEAmericaRadio.com, Live365.com, RadioPower.org, and all that sort of thing. You'll find all the links to all of those and to the radio stations that we're on at TomHartman.com, where you can also find our chat room, where you'll find one of the most erudite, intelligent, interesting conversations anywhere in cyberspace. We have a fascinating guest to start the hour off with, Lawrence Korb, and I want to get to him in just a moment, but Robert in Denver has called even before we started the show. Robert must have something that's really hot he wants to talk about here, perhaps picking up from yesterday's conversation. So let's hear from Robert, and then we'll get into our guest and do this right. Robert, welcome to the Tom Hartman program. What's up?
Hi, Tom.
Hey, Robert.
I have a question about peak oil. Why is it so difficult to get the concept across to people that we're running out of petroleum? Go ahead.
I wrote a book about this. It's called The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight. Leonardo DiCaprio just made a movie out of it. There's a five-minute clip of it on his website, leonardodicaprio.com. The Hubbert Peak was reached in the United States in the 70s. We're looking at a worldwide peak, that being the point at which 50% of the oil has been pumped and it starts getting very expensive to suck oil out of wells. The worldwide Hubbert Peak is projected to be sometime in the next 3 or 4 years. Perhaps we've even passed it. But, you know, it's not something that the press has much interest in. It is a subject, though, Robert, that I think we need to keep coming back to. But it's beyond the scope of today's program. So how about we get into that conversation one of these days, you know, tomorrow, the next day, something like that. Is that all right?
I'd be glad to.
Okay. Thanks for the call, Robert. I appreciate it. Lawrence Korb is a senior fellow at the Center for American Progress. Prior to joining the center, he was a senior fellow and director of national security studies in the Council of Foreign Relations. This guy really knows defense and defense policy. From 1981 through 1985, Mr. Korb was the Assistant Secretary of Defense of the United States. Yeah, that was in the Reagan administration. In that position, he administered about 70% of the defense budget. From his service in that position, he was awarded the Department of Defense's Medal for Distinguished Public Service. And then, in addition to that, he has a long string of academic positions and fellowships and a dean of the Graduate School of Public and International Affairs at the University of Pittsburgh, vice president of corporate operations at Raytheon. Lawrence Korb, a real honor and pleasure to have you here. I heard part of a roundtable that you did this morning, and you really clearly know your stuff.
Well, thank you. It's nice to be with you, Tom.
And if any of
our callers have questions for Mr. Korb. Our number is 1-800-TALK-YES, 1-800-825-5937. Mr. Korb, how, you know, you have a, you're probably in a better position than most to understand, to see past the rhetoric, to hear the words behind the words that are being said, the you know, the speaking in code that seems to be going on in the media. What do you think is happening with this so-called war in Iraq?
Well, what's happening is we did not plan adequately for the post-major conflict phase. This administration basically believed a man by the name of Chalabi, Mr. Chalabi, who's the head of the Iraqi National Congress, who convinced them that we would be greeted as liberators, that the police and military would remain intact, they would provide security. If we didn't damage the infrastructure during the war, they begin to be pumping oil, and they basically could pay for the reconstruction themselves. And all of those assumptions turned out not to be true. And now what we're in is a race for time, time to get the majority of the Iraqi people to convince them that life will be better off after Saddam Hussein, that we will turn power over to them and they will be able to have a functioning government. They'll be able to have enough security that they can rebuild the country. What's happened is that because we underestimated the difficulty, we didn't put enough troops in, we didn't have the right kind of troops, we didn't get the support from the international community that we thought we would get, even though we had basically ignored them on the way in during the war, and it's going to be much longer, more expensive, we're going to have more casualties, and the question is, will the Iraqi people become convinced that we're on the right course and things are getting better? And will the American people have the patience to remain until the job is done?
Now, you raised some interesting questions. What's your take on the answers to those?
Well, I think the first thing is you've got to admit the problem. And I was dumbfounded yesterday at the president saying, basically, the bad news is good news.
Yeah.
I mean, the fact of the matter is things are not getting better, and I think he has to emphasize that. When they underestimated the problem after the war, what they did was blaming the media for only focusing on the negative, and then yesterday, when it was just a horrible day, saying, well, that shows what progress we're making. I think he has to be honest.
Yeah.
I think he has to internationalize this as quickly as possible. Iraq is not some prize that we won and, you know, we're going to keep for ourselves. He accomplished his objective. He got rid of Saddam Hussein. The international community has a vested interest in Iraq becoming a stable democracy. Why not turn power over to international organizations? Why not let them basically run the place? And even the military should report to the UN. It would still be commanded by the United States because we have the largest number of troops, but it really should report to an international body so it doesn't look like another Western occupation. We may think, and I believe our motives are good, but that's not how it plays over there on the ground.
Right. It's 12:13. We're talking with Lawrence Korb, a senior fellow at the Center for American Progress, from live from Washington, D.C. at the New American Strategies for Security and Peace Conference. And Mr. Korb, you mentioned internationalizing this process, and it seems that the Bush administration sort of threw a bone to the international community at the UN, last week or the week before. In as much as they said, we'll let you help with some of the military things. But there's this aggressive privatization program going on where we're selling off the state industries and perhaps in violation of United Nations laws. And there is the question of the oil. And the what I'm hearing from people outside, we actually had a caller into the show from Germany day before yesterday. What I'm hearing from the world outside, in fact, I'll be in Germany in 2 weeks, is that much of the world thinks that this was a war on behalf of American corporate interests. It's not like we haven't done that before. You know, the Dole pineapple in Nicaragua and in Hawaii, and I mean, we have a kind of a long history of that, and that the spoils of war are really what we were after, and that we have made no effort and won't even touch the topic in discussion of saying, okay, we'll help split up the oil with you or whatever. I haven't seen any of that.
Well, I don't think that that's true, but the fact of the matter is a lot of people around the world, particularly people in the Muslim world, believe that because we claim that we were doing this because Saddam had weapons of mass destruction. He may even have had nuclear weapons. That turned out not to be true, so people obviously will suspect our motives. People are also concerned about the fact that we're basically just awarding the contracts for rebuilding Iraq to American companies. And the president last week, I think, made a step in the right direction by saying the money that other countries contributed would not be administered by the United States, and therefore that the contracts would then be awarded not just to American companies. I mean, what they've done is they've taken a bad situation and made it worse by the way they're handling it, and unfortunately does feed into these misperceptions. Yeah. I'm convinced that the president, in his own mind, thought he had to do this because of what happened on September 11th. I don't think that was correct. In fact, if anything, by going into Iraq, we have undermine the fight against terrorists with a global reach, which are the enemy. We've gotten a lot more recruits to Al-Qaeda as a result of what's happened. The money we're spending there, we can't spend at home on things like communications gear for our police and fire departments, protective clothing for them, medicines for our public health service. So basically what we've done is we have undermined our security by doing this.
Right, and created quite a mess in the process. 1-800-TALK-YES is our number, and Phil in Los Angeles is on the line. Phil, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Hi, how are you?
Great. You're live and on the air with Larry Korb, Lawrence Korb.
Hi. Well, it's an honor to speak to you. My main question is, and, you know, I have strong opinions on them. You know, obviously, I listen to you almost every day and, you know, agree with you on almost everything you say. My main question is why nobody seems to address this, that, you know, we go into Iraq and, you know, we are trying to instill a freedom-inspired democracy, but to me, it doesn't seem like a democracy like the United States. I do not think is possible to function in an area that is surrounded by non-democratic nations. It just doesn't seem feasible that you could have, you know, a democratic republic such as the United States in a region that is surrounded by religious fundamentalism and.
Right. Yeah, and then there's also the issue of imposing democracy on somebody. Phil, thanks for
exactly.
the call. I appreciate your comments. Mr. Korb, what do you think of that?
Well, the administration believes, and there are many people in the administration, many of whom I work with in the Reagan administration, really believe that if you can create a democracy in Iraq, it will spread throughout the Middle East. They've sort of taken Woodrow Wilson one step further. You know, President Wilson said we want to make the world safe for democracy. They're basically saying we want to make it democratic.
Okay.
Even if that is possible, it's going to be a long, difficult process. I mean, what, for example, would happen if we say, okay, Iraqi, you can have an election. You have an election, and they decide that they want an Islamic republic like Iran. Will be we willing to go along with that type of outcome? And what would that mean for what we call, you know, the liberal democratic values? Democracy is not just about elections. It's about a whole way of thinking, freedom of the press, freedom of religion, independent judiciary. Power really vesting in the people with governments temporarily holding it. And even like people in California, the power to recall our officials if we don't like them.
Right.
And that's going to be a long, hard process. And if we want to do that, I think the president, again, has to level with the American people and say, look, your sons and daughters are going to be over there a long time, and we're going to be spending an awful lot of money. And had he done that before the war, I think basically, the American people would have understood the cost, and then they could have rendered their judgment on whether it was worth it in terms of money and lives.
And there may well have not been a war had that happened. I mean, had there been the kind of debate that the founders envisioned when they gave war-making powers to Congress.
That's correct.
We're speaking with Lawrence Korb, a senior fellow at the Center for American Progress. Prior to joining the center, he was a senior fellow and director of national security studies at the Council on Foreign Relations. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
exciting it can be, which is
why you want to feel really fast. I mean, the instant Maximum Strength Mylan's a liquid hits your throat, you can feel it rushing right to where you need it.
Ah, the cool liquid hits the back of your throat, and you know you're feeling something
velvety smooth, soothing that burning inside you. Mylan's wonderful, wet, drenching sensation
restores and refreshes in a most glorious fashion.
Try Maximum Strength Mylanta.
Soothing at the
speed of life.
Excuse me, ma'am.
Yeah?
Have you bought your Halloween candy yet?
Not yet.
Well, I've got the best candy idea for you to give away on Halloween.
Really?
Juicy gummies.
Juicy gummies?
That's right. Juicy gummies are the first gummies made with real fruit juices. They're fat-free and they are so good.
Mmm.
You have to try them all. The peach rings, froggies, creepies, and much, much more. They're all delicious.
Yeah, they are.
Juicy gummies come in playful packages, fun shapes and colors. All the kids will be at your door when the word gets out that you're giving away juicy gummies on Halloween.
Mmm.
Juicy gummies come in 30 and 50 pack bags, so there's plenty of candy for the whole neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
And did I mention that these gummy candies are actually made with real fruit juices and fat-free?
Wow.
So if you haven't bought your candy for Halloween, rush on out to Walmart, Kmart, Eckerd's, Dollar General, 7-Eleven, Fred's, Kerr Drugs, Brooks Pharmacy, and many other stores nationwide. Sorry, ma'am, you can't eat all of our samples. Well, this store here sells juicy gummies.
Ooh, thanks.
Look for Juicy Gummies, America's first gummy made with real fruit juices. Boy, they're delicious.
If you think people are more important than corporations, you need to see the Progressive Populist. Twice a month, we feature columnists such as Jim Hightower, Molly Ivins, and other plutocrat pluckers from around the country. We'll send you a free sample copy if you'll call us toll-free 1-800-205-7067 or see our website at populist.com. That's 1-800-205-7067 or populist.com or the Progressive Populist, the newspaper for Main Street USA.
If you're looking for the latest in cutting-edge technology and the products that everyone is talking about, tune into tomorrow right here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Pacific. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the highly interactive radio program with experts featuring the latest in consumer electronics, technology, computers, and the Internet. We cover all things cool, like digital photography and video, home theater and audio, home automation, gadgets and gizmos, the technology of making music, computer peripherals, HDTV, DVD, MP3s, car audio, navigation and security, and lots more. If it draws current, we talk about it. Let us bring you into tomorrow. Check out our website anytime at graveline.com and join us this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific, here on the IE America Radio Network.
Tune into IE America Radio Network weekdays for the best in progressive talk radio. The Tom Hartman Show.
That's the Tom Hartman program right here on the IE America Radio Network.
The Radio Free Speed Zone.
Welcome, one and all. Tony Trupiano with you on this Tuesday afternoon. Hope everything is well where you're at. It is okie dokie where I sit.
Family Talk.
This is Family Talk with Dr. Mike Riera.
The All-American Talk Radio Show.
All-American Talk Radio with Peter B. Collins and Peter Lawford.
The Mike Malloy Show.
I know I have a reputation of being fiery, hard-edged, passionate, outspoken, opinionated, and sometimes explosive. And that reputation is well-deserved because I am. I'm a liberal with a microphone, and that makes me dangerous.
For more information on these shows and other shows, or to listen live, visit us on the web at ieamericaradio.com.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
It's my duty to spend and to buy, to prove to Ben Laden I'll shop till I die. I'm a world-class consumer, I'm sure of my role. I vote with my dollars for corporate control. I'll prove that I'm loyal and rush to the store, where spending is my contribution to war.
And welcome back. It's Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. We're talking with Lawrence Korb, a senior fellow at the Center for American Progress, which is one of the sponsors of the conference this weekend here in Washington, D.C., New American Strategies for Security and Peace. Been a fascinating, fascinating week or a couple of days here and learned an awful lot. And 1-800-TALK-YES is our number. Joel in Antioch, California is on the line. Joel, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program. You're on live with me and Lawrence Korb.
Thank you, Tom. By the way, you introduced me to IE America when I read an article about you that you wrote on Common Dreams 6 months ago, and I want to thank you very much.
Oh, you're welcome. In fact, I've got a piece up there this week. Republicans, please take back your party. I write for them fairly regularly.
Somebody's got to take back the party. That's why I'm calling, because your gentleman keeps referring to the same tune that the president has to level with the American people in order for these things to work in Iraq. That man can't tell the truth. He was lying yesterday about the banner on the USS Abraham. He'll lie about the smallest things. Why would he tell the truth about something very important like Iraq? So I think if you want to accomplish anything, you have to start from the truth. And Bush can't tell the truth. That's all I want to tell the guy.
Okay. Joel, thank you. What are your thoughts on that, Mr. Korb?
Well, you know, obviously, we're all Americans. We're in this terrible struggle against terrorists with a global reach. And we've got to hope that our political leaders do level with us. If we don't, that's why we have elections. And, you know, we've got an election coming up for the White House in a little over a year. And I think the president will pay a price. And, you know, it's amazing to me, you know, if you go back and when I was a young man, I went to Vietnam, and I went there, and I really thought I felt good about it, you know, and maybe you're young and foolish and felt I was really involved in something very, very important. And then when I realized while I was there and then when I came back that I wasn't level with, you know, and that really bothered me. And I think, you know, so it's not a Republican or a Democratic thing. All presidents try and put the best spin on things, but I think Joel is right that they've gone a little bit too far. Yesterday, the two statements, the one about the bad news is good news, and then blaming the sailors on the aircraft carrier. Let me tell you, I spent 4 years on active duty with the Navy as a naval flight officer, another 20 years in the reserves. President comes on an aircraft carrier, nothing happens without them knowing it. I mean, there's no way that you're going to do that. And we do know that that banner was made in the White House, and maybe some sailors wanted to do that because they did feel good. They were coming home. Their mission was accomplished. Basically, this is not a naval war anymore. And so that was true, but the country's wasn't. And the particularly the soldiers on the ground over there, this is really difficult, not only because more of them are dying, they haven't been trained for this, and this has got to be so frustrating because they can't use their training because they're basically glorified policemen. They're not soldiers over there. And this has got to make, you know, their morale is terrible. There was a survey in the Stars and Stripes, which is the Pentagon's newspaper, that basically said that half of them aren't going to reenlist when this is over. And if they don't, boy, we're going to have some big problems, because if somebody leaves the military after 10 years, you've got to bring in three new people to replace them. And back in during Vietnam, General Maxwell Taylor said something I think about today. He said, you know, we sent the Army to Vietnam to save Vietnam. We had to take it out to save the Army. And I just hope this doesn't happen in Iraq. We'll have to take the Army out to save it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a mess. We've got just a few seconds left, but just a quick question. You mentioned Ahmed Chalabi. He's a convicted swindler, you know, bank fraud, all this kind of stuff. Do you think that the president actually believed him, or do you think that this was another example of the selective use of intelligence? This guy said what he wanted to hear, so he put him forward.
I think it was more selective, and a lot of people around the president, like Cheney, the vice president, and the Defense Department people did believe him. He was their guy even before Bush got elected.
Great. Lawrence Korb, a senior fellow at the Center for American Progress. Thank you very much, Mr. Korb, for joining us today. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Stay tuned. We will be right back.
What does corporate power have to do with disarmament? How does working for racial justice affect trade agreements? And what do they all have to do with the Cuban blockade? Having trouble making a connection? It's our specialty. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, for 88 years, connecting the issues for democracy and social justice. Why don't you connect with us? WILPF.org. or call 215-563-7110.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
Scientists say we should learn from history before we go all out with hydrogen. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. Fuel cells that use hydrogen produce electricity and emit only water. If hydrogen fuel cells replace the internal combustion engine, they could eliminate problems with smog and oil spills. But some people say we need to examine all the impacts of this fuel before we start using it. Tracy Tromp is a physicist at the California Institute of Technology. She's the lead author of a study in the journal Science about the potential impact of a hydrogen economy on the environment. Tromp says hydrogen could leak out during fueling, storage, or any other point along the way. She says too much of this loose gas could disrupt the recovery of the Earth's protective ozone layer. Tromp says this is not a reason to dismiss the idea of using hydrogen-powered fuel cells.
We're not advocating scrapping hydrogen fuel cells. We think they're a great idea. But we're at a unique position at this point in time. The hydrogen fuel cells are a technology that's currently under development. We're not set down any particular technology path. So what we're hoping is to force a dialogue to start thinking about the environment and which of these technologies are most environmentally friendly.
Tromp says that if we can anticipate problems, we can work to avoid them. She says that did not happen before modern economies were built on a foundation of fossil fuel. The consequences included air pollution and widespread emissions of greenhouse gases. Tromp says people are working to better understand how hydrogen behaves in the environment. She says that information is critical to predicting and monitoring the impact of hydrogen fuel cells as a common source of energy. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights, taking your calls, talking to celebrities like Raven Simone from The Cosby Show and the Dr. Dolittle movies. Do you have any pets of your own?
I do. I have two chinchillas and I have a big Briar.
Do you train your dogs?
I don't. I just give him love and take him out. So he better love me because I have to wake up at 4 o'clock in the morning.
So here you are, Therese Dolittle, to talk to the animals. And you don't even train your own dogs. Nothing but love.
Nothing but love. All the food is love.
Animal Talk on the IE America Radio Network.
This is Mike Malloy with the IE America Radio Network. Want to know more about our talk shows and personalities but don't know where to look? Do you want to find out what guests are scheduled or what topics we'll be discussing on our programs? Would you like to participate in live chat or vote in interactive polls? All this and more is available at the IE America Radio website. Bookmark it, stop surfing, and get active. Visit www.ieamericaradio.com today.
The best of the rest of the news. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Let's turn up our nose at the World Court of Law, for justice was never the point of this war. We're bombing to stop future terrorist acts. Can't you tell a war from a terror attack? I'll prove that I'm loyal and rush to the store, where spending is my contribution to war. And the American flag's on the counter for sale. We're all made in China by prisoners in jail.
And welcome back. It's Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network, broadcasting live from the tail end of the New American Strategies for Security and Peace Conference. They're just wrapping up here now. Senator Chuck Hagel, of all people, is speaking at this moment. Or maybe he's done by now. He was supposed to start at 11:45. I went to a breakfast meeting this morning at 7:30 and heard Hillary Clinton speak. And that was fascinating. She had some really interesting things to say. And in fact, I had some notes on them. I'll have to dig them out here. I don't know what I did with it. Anyhow, she one of the things that she talked about was the core values that make up democracy. What are the core values of democracy? And transparency was one of the most important ones. And she said that we're not demonstrating democracy. You can't just go into a, to another country and say, you will now, you know, poof, you're now going to become Democrat. You have to show them by example, not by words, not by lectures. And I thought it was an excellent presentation. And it didn't sound at all like a campaign speech, for those of you who are still convinced that her plan is to run for office. This thing yesterday, George Bush's news conference, this is really shocking. If you go back on the New York Times to May 16th, here's this article. Officials of past Democratic and Republican administrations marvel at how the White House does not seem to miss an opportunity to showcase Mr. Bush in dramatic and perfectly lighted settings. It is all by design, says the New York Times. The White House has stocked its communications operation with people from network television with expertise in lighting, camera angles, and the importance of backdrops. On Tuesday, this was back in May 16th, at a speech promoting his economic plan in Indianapolis, White House aides went so far as to ask people in the crowd behind Mr. Bush to take off their ties. WISH-TV in Indianapolis reported so that they would look like the ordinary folk the president said would benefit from his tax cut. The New York Times goes on to point out that these efforts to highlight Bush in a particular video fashion can be both costly and ambitious. And they talk about, for example, they rented three barges of giant Musco lights, the kind used to illuminate sports stadiums and rock concerts, and sent them across New York Harbor, tethered them in the water around the base of the Statue of Liberty, and then blasted them upward to illuminate all 350 feet of America's symbol of freedom. So we get this incredible, I mean, Mount Rushmore, they positioned the cameras just so the president's face would be there among all those other presidents on Mount Rushmore. And now we have George Bush saying that mission accomplished sign that was made in the White House, he's blaming that on the soldiers. Now, those guys did it. This wasn't really his idea. This wasn't his plan. He wasn't up for this. Not my responsibility. It's an unfortunate mantra that we seem to be hearing over and over again in the Bush administration. Anyhow, as I was saying, we're broadcasting live from the conference, the New American Strategies for Security and Peace. And, oh, okay, your volume control is right here for my voice and right here for your own voice, okay? And we have Michelle Flournoy. Am I pronouncing that right, Michelle?
Yes, you are.
Great. And Michelle is a senior advisor on the CSIS International Security Program, where she works on a broad range of defense policy and international security issues. Another participant in the conference today here, the New American Strategies for Security and Peace, co-founded by the American Prospect Magazine, the Center for American Progress, and the Century Foundation. And Michelle, what is your take on what's going on in Iraq, and how has this war with Iraq specifically made us more or less secure? What have we stepped into here?
Well, I think the jury is still out on the question you ask. It remains to be seen whether we will ultimately be more or less secure as a result of this war. I think that one of the things that we're seeing is that our intervention in Iraq is being used by terrorist groups in the Middle East and globally as a recruiting mechanism, as a way of getting new fighters to join their cause. You know, come to Iraq, take a pot shot at America.
Mm-hmm.
And that's presenting tremendous problems for the mission there. We've had tremendous difficulty creating the secure environment that's really necessary for reconstruction to proceed. I don't think it's a lost cause at this point, but I think the window of opportunity is closing, and that either this will be turned around in the next months, or we'll see it go in a very disastrous direction.
Yeah, it seems that we have an administration that puts a style over substance so often. You know, it's when the news isn't good, you blame the media. If a whole bunch of people die, well, that's really good news. It's just, you know, the spin just never ends. And we have a caller, Chuck in Charleston, West Virginia, who's on the line, and he has a question that I think comes back to that, and whether it's something that you want to get into or not, we'll see. 1-800-TALK-YES is our number. If you have a question for Michelle Flournoy or want to make a comment on these things, Chuck in Charleston, West Virginia is on the line. Chuck, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program. You're live.
Hey, Tom.
On
thank
the air.
You.
You're welcome.
Yeah, I was a Marine from 1995 to 2000, stationed in Miramar, and did some time overseas too. And I had some experience with President Clinton just coming into Miramar up on the flight line and then basically getting into a limo and heading downtown. Now, I got to tell you, if a president comes aboard your base, ship, whatever, if it's a military installation, there is 3 to 4 weeks worth of planning. I mean, we always call it a Operation Dog and Pony Show that goes on, and there is nothing that is unscripted. And if the Bushies want to put out there like this was unscripted and that mission accomplished sign was put up in another light, they got to be kidding me. They probably had Madison Avenue figuring this whole thing out for days. I mean, heck, they turned the ship around to where you couldn't see the coastline behind him.
Right, and you get the lighting just right.
It infuriates me that he's going to try to blame this on the sailors that were out there on that ship with this big mission accomplished sign. They knew exactly what they were doing. He could have flown out there in a helicopter, but no, he had to land on the carrier so they could say, oh, look, a fighter jock takes to the sky again. It's the wonderful President Bush. He's going to take Osama bin Laden down and
Chuck, let's keep in mind, he didn't actually fly that jet. He was a passenger on it. There was an actual real pilot in that thing.
This man didn't spend enough time actually in the military to learn how to fly anything. He might have flown a couple Cessnas when he was doing his training, but other than that, he's never flown anything.
Well, he lost his flight certification. But anyhow, okay, Chuck, thank you for the call. I appreciate that. Michelle Flournoy, what are your thoughts on this whole, you know, let's win a war by public relations and the domestic attempts to do that, and then the botched, serial botched international attempts, you know, our rolling out a radio station and then shutting it down and our saying yes, free press, and then closing newspapers and what do you see happening in all this?
I think the caller raises a very important point, and that is this administration was really caught off guard by what happened in Iraq after the main force-on-force battle stopped. They had a fundamentally flawed plan, a fundamentally flawed set of assumptions for how the post-conflict phase would go. And they assumed that this would be a decapitation operation, that essentially you'd remove Saddam and his loyalists from power, but the army would remain intact and simply switch sides. The police would show up for work the next day, and it would take a very small number of American troops for a very short period of time to sort of put everything back in order. If they had looked, however, at the last decade of experience in other places like Haiti and Bosnia and Kosovo, they would have understood that a security vacuum would develop as the police melt away into the population, as the army doesn't show up for work, and so forth. So they had a set of faulty planning assumptions that really led them to not have a coherent plan for dealing with the enormous challenges they are going to be facing. And we've been playing a game of catch-up ever since they were caught unprepared.
Yeah. Do you... Boy. Do you think that they actually are forming a plan now? I mean, is there any evidence that there's... I heard yesterday one of the speakers, the general, I'm forgetting his name, who was on the panel with you.
General Traynor.
Yes. Who said that it was 2 weeks after Saddam's statue fell that the troops on the ground discovered what parts of Iraq they were going to be responsible for securing. That they should have known that before they even went in. But that the plan... didn't come about until there was no choice. We have to figure out where to put these people.
Right.
I mean, do you see any evidence of an actual plan happening now?
I do think that certainly for the military dimensions of the operation, a plan has been put in place. I think that we're still making plans on the civilian side on various reconstruction areas. I do think it's coming into place. The problem is we had a critical period in the weeks after Saddam's regime was removed, where we had the potential for a honeymoon period to win over the support of the population, to establish a secure environment for reconstruction, and we lost that opportunity. Mm-hmm. So we've been scrambling to try to get back to that place ever since, and it's very, very difficult to do. We've also consistently under-resourced the mission. I don't believe that we have the forces necessary or the civilian capabilities necessary on the ground to really do the job right. We've tried to get additional capabilities through going to the international community. We've had limited success there. We're trying to build up Iraqi capabilities, but that takes time. And in the meantime, we're asking a great deal from an under-resourced force in the country.
Yeah. You mentioned a window of opportunity. I've seen two. One was right after 9/11 when Le Monde ran the headline in French, "We are all Americans now." Mm. And Saddam Hussein led a candlelight march in Baghdad. And there, I mean, literally the entire planet had come together behind us. And we had an opportunity, I think, to say, okay, they're criminals. Did this, and we as a world need to unite and find these criminals using and turning it into a police operation, essentially. Instead, we've elevated Al-Qaeda to the status of a nation state, which it's not, and declared this war, and the world has essentially turned against us. All the countries of Europe, Greece with November 17, the Red Brigades in Germany and Italy, the IRA in England, when they were confronted with terrorist threats, rather than declaring war, they dealt with them essentially as police actions, in my recollection. Have we blown it by the way that we framed it right from the get-go? The first part of my question. And the second is, then, when does this window close? That you're with the second window, this window of, okay, now we're in Iraq, and pretty soon all of Iraq is either going to embrace us or hate us, but, you know, we're moving.
Well, I think characterizing this as a war against terrorism or the post 9/11 response as such, you know, the truth in it is that, yes, it's a war in the sense that it requires mobilizing a sustained national response, and using all of the instruments of our national power to achieve the objective. So I wouldn't underestimate the threat. But calling it a war does suggest that it will be won primarily through military means, and I don't think that's the case. This war is going to be won primarily through intelligence, law enforcement, financial measures, diplomacy, public diplomacy, foreign assistance, the full range of things, and the military will play an important role, but certainly not the lead or dominant role. I do think that this administration has really squandered an opportunity since 9/11. I mean, it inherited a surplus of international goodwill from the previous administration. I think 9/11 only increased the goodwill that we had in the bank. And now when you look at polls of opinions of America around the world, we're lower than we've been, I think, in this past century. I mean, the figures are truly shocking.
We're back to the Spanish-American War
time. And I think the key mistake that was made post 9/11 is, rather than say to our friends and allies around the world, this is a common threat that we have to face together. We will welcome any and all assistance. We appreciate you being with us. We are going to be with you. President Bush took this sort of very hard line, we're for us or you're against us. And in Afghanistan, for example, NATO took the unprecedented step of invoking Article 5 of the alliance, which says that NATO would come to the aid and security of the United States as an alliance. And we said, basically, no thanks. We're going to do Afghanistan as a U.S. operation. And you can help here and there if you want. But we declined to go into Afghanistan as a transatlantic alliance with our European partners standing shoulder to shoulder. And that was a first step of many similar steps that I think turned this into a unilateral crusade instead of what it should have been, which is a multilateral campaign against a common threat.
Yeah. In the minute or so we have left in this segment, why do you think we did that?
I think the administration believed that others would follow anyway, and that the downsides of having to do this, weighing the concerns of others, managing the alliance, were greater than the upsides, that it was going to be easier and cleaner for the U.S. to go it alone, and others would have no choice but to follow in the end.
And history has not demonstrated that was a wise choice, apparently.
No, it has not. And I think that Iraq was sort of put the punctuation point on it, that we really have lost the international coalition that should have been built to fight the war on terrorism first, and also should have been built for the separate objective of deposing Saddam.
Yeah. If the Bush administration gets reelected, do you see, and we're just about, we've got about 20 seconds here left, so I'll just lay this out and then you can respond to it after the commercial break, but it seems to me that there's like, you know, we've come to Robert Frost's fork in the road, you know, and if the Bush administration is reelected and if they change their policies, which, I mean, they may change. He may dump Dick Cheney and take on Rudy Giuliani as his vice presidential candidate, which is my prediction, and, you know, go off in some other direction. But if they continue down that road, what will the future be? Or if a Democrat is elected, is there going to be time to salvage America's reputation and our relationships around the world? We're talking with Michelle Flournoy. Flournoy. Yes. And here at the New American Strategies for Security and Peace Conference in Washington, D.C., this is Tom Hartman. We'll be right back.
To create a real democracy in this country, we need to sit down and talk with other people. Democracy begins with conversation. But how do we begin the conversation? The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom has a 10-week study guide called Challenge Corporate Power, Assert the People's Rights, to help you get the conversation started in your community. It's free on the web at WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
Welcome to Baguette Country. Introducing the Santa Fe Fire Grilled Chicken Baguette Sandwich from Burger King. A juicy breast of fire-grilled chicken, sweet peppers and onions, and a hearty fire-roasted tomato sauce on our new fresh-baked bread. Made to order with only 5 grams of fat. The new Santa Fe Chicken Baguette. Burger King. Come on over. The fire is ready. Not a low-sodium food. For complete nutritional info, visit BurgerKing.com.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The Founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection, The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hartman.
If you've got a clogged up nose, Simply Stuffy. If you've got a snuffly nose, Simply Stuffy. If the rest of you feels fine, but your nose is out of line, give your schnozzle what it needs, Simply Stuffy.
Simply Stuffy, from the makers of Children's Tylenol. It has only the medicine your child needs to make a stuffy nose simply disappear.
If you want to smell a rose, get your stuff out of your nose. If you're sick of feeling snotty, Simply Stuffy.
Simply Stuffy. Use as directed.
Brendan was spending the afternoon helping me pick out furniture for the new place.
The ladies are doing a little furniture shopping, are they?
That's scary. I hope you didn't make any choices without a professional.
Beanbag chairs for everybody.
God help us. Bearskin rug.
I put the car in swinger, baby.
On the IE America Radio Network.
Animal Talk, not your father's radio show about animals.
Welcome to Lifestyles of the Wet and Stinky. We're looking at fishy fat cats and wealthy crustaceans. This is Bloodsucking Leech here, sending you algae-covered wishes and caviar-laying dreams.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights on the IE America Radio Network.
All right, boys, come on.
Show.
NBC Wall Street Journal poll. Bush is in the worst political trouble of his presidency, according to this new poll. Yeah, they have their work cut out for them. What's it going to be? Is it going to be a phony assassination attempt on Bush like they staged with Reagan? Is it going to be another attack on U.S. soil where another 3,000 Americans and foreigners are going to be killed? Is it going to be another attack on another country? What are they going to do since they can't govern? Huh? So look for another war. The guy is toast, and you know it as well as I do, Truth Seekers, and maybe, just maybe, some Americans are coming out of the ether. But don't count on it, because they'll go right back into the ether as soon as these thugs engineer an act of violence against this country, or another war, or something about Bush. Oh, Bush broke his leg today. He was running and he stumbled. Oh, sympathy, sympathy. You know what I'm talking about.
The Mike Malloy Show, Monday through Friday from 9 p.m. till midnight Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Little boxes on the hillside, little boxes made of ticky-tacky, little boxes, all the same. There's a green one and a pink.
And welcome back. It's Tom Hartman, defending America from the conservative weapons of mass deception. Here on the IE America Radio Network, we're speaking with Michelle Flournoy, a senior advisor at the Center for Strategic and International Studies, the International Security Program there, where she works on a broad range of defense policy and international security issues. One of the real experts here in Washington, D.C., in the world, and very pleased to have you. And in fact, Michelle's going to be with us after the commercial, over the news at the top, into the next hour. If you have questions for her, our number is 1-800-TALK-YES. Michelle, your thoughts on the question that I asked just before we went to the break about this fork in the road that we're facing. If the Bush administration continues down this road, what's it going to do? Or if the Bush is, or if Bush has a change of heart or a change of vice presidents, or a Democrat is elected and we re-embrace the world, how might, you know, is there time?
I think that even if the Bush administration proceeds down its previously announced doctrinal path, it will be somewhat constrained by the energy and resources that Iraq will continue to require for some time, certainly into the next year. I also think that they've been somewhat chastened by this experience. I do think you're likely to see a number of changes in personnel, and that they're going to be a little bit more small-c conservative in their application of the doctrine of preemption. I think the Iraq experience has given them some pause, and they're reconsidering now what can we really do, what's possible, etc. I don't think they have fundamentally re-examined their basic style and approach of a more go-it-alone posture and an overestimation of our military strength and an underestimation of what the other instruments of our national power can do for us.
Yeah.
If there's a change of an election, I think, or a change of administration as a result of the election, I think you'll see a very substantial change in our national security strategy. Right now, you know, the Democrats are in the primary season. They're all trying to differentiate themselves from one another, so we're focused on the differences. But underlying those differences, there's a very core Democratic platform that emphasizes alliances, multilateral approaches, integrating all the instruments of our national power to support a strategy of engagement and supporting
we've got to do that.
Liberty around
that.
The world.
This is Tom Hartman. We're talking with Michelle Flournoy. We're here on the IE America Radio Network, live coast to coast. Call 1-800-TALK-YES if you'd like to be on the air with us. We'll be back right after this.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Copyright 2003.
My fellow Americans, this is Laura Pickles Bush. Some of you may be alarmed by subversive propaganda spread by that liberal media filter, Mike Malloy, who distorts the truth every weeknight at 9 p.m. Eastern Time. Rest assured, our sources at Fox News confirm that we have a fabulous, booming economy and enjoy daily glorious victories in the numerous fronts of the ongoing terror wars. And besides, any problems we're experiencing are all Clinton's fault. This is Laura Pickles Bush saying, when it comes to the Mike Malloy Show, just say no.
Yes, I'm calling about
about the Mike Malloy program. You know, the reason I turned this man off...
Why?
...is because he sounds like an 8-year-old.
Me?
Name calling.
I'm not an 8-year-old. I'm not an 8-year-old. I'm not.
You should get somebody who at least has some intelligence.
No, don't fire me. No. I got kids in college.
The Mike Malloy Show, weekdays from 9 p.m. till midnight, Eastern Time, on IE America Radio Network.
This is the IE America Radio Network News Break, your significant news source.
This is Don Waller in New York. On May 1st, after a dramatic tailhook landing in a Navy jet, George W. Bush stood on the deck of the aircraft carrier USS Abraham Lincoln under a banner reading Mission Accomplished and proclaimed victory in Iraq. That declaration has proven premature given the continuing attacks on U.S. soldiers and other targets in Iraq, and every aspect of the president's appearance on the carrier has provoked intense criticism from Bush's adversaries. Yesterday, Bush disavowed responsibility for part of that appearance, saying that the Mission Accomplished banner was the work of the carrier crew. However, according to a May 15th New York Times article, the banner was one of many details attended to by Scott Sforza, a former ABC producer who was hired by the Bush campaign. Sforza and his staff were on board the Abraham Lincoln for days prior to Mr. Bush's landing and supervised every aspect of the photo op, including the banner. Two American soldiers were killed when their Abrams battle tank was damaged by resistance fighters, U.S. officials said Wednesday, as the number of U.S. soldiers killed in combat since major fighting ended topped the wartime total. In a separate attack, seven Ukrainian troops were wounded in the first ambush of a multinational unit in the Polish sector south of Baghdad, coalition officials said. The latest deaths bring to 115 the number of American soldiers killed in combat in Iraq since President Bush declared an end to major fighting May 1st. Defense Department figures show 114 U.S. soldiers died in the active combat phase, which began on March 20th. The Santa Ana winds that have fueled California's wildfires calmed on Wednesday, but forecasts called for Pacific Air to push fires in new and dangerous directions. At least 16 people have died in the blazes since October 21st, and more than 1,600 homes have been destroyed. More news after this.
Our national parks have always been there for us, standing as silent reminders of who we are and what it means to be an American. They're full of history, of memories, of majesty. But now these great American treasures need our help. I'm Richard Dreyfuss, asking you to help preserve America's national parks. Visit AmericansForNationalParks.org today, because there's just too much to lose.
This is a public service announcement from Americans for National Parks and this radio station.
A hearse overturned on a German motorway Wednesday, shattering the coffin and ejecting the corpse onto the tarmac, along with a bag of coffin nails that brought traffic to a standstill. The driver had fallen asleep at the wheel and yanked the steering wheel round when he woke up, said a spokesman for the regional government in Dusseldorf, Western Germany. The 840 motorway was closed for an hour, and there was a four-mile backup as police collected the coffin nails and took the corpse away. For IE American Network News, this is Don Waller in New York.
This has been the IE America Radio Network News Break, produced by TakeBackTheMedia.com. For more information, visit IEAmericaRadio.com or TakeBackTheMedia.com.
If your hacking just won't stop, simply cough. If you're honking like a duck, simply cough. If the rest of you feel fine, but you're coughing all the time, and it's waking up your sister, simply cough.
Simply cough. From the makers of Children's Tylenol, it has only the medicine your child needs to make a cough simply disappear.
If your soda's all a twinkle and you're really in a pickle, then you're hacking off a packing, simply cough.
Simply cough. Use as directed.
Tom DeLay, the loopy majority leader of the U.S. House, didn't have enough to do in Washington, so in his spare time, he's become the new czar of Texas. He swept into our state capitol early this year with a brand new scheme to redraw the boundary lines of our congressional districts. Never mind that redistricting had already been done just 2 years ago by a bipartisan panel of judges. Tom doesn't have any patience with bipartisanship, though. He didn't like those old lines because, he whined, the people just weren't electing enough Republicans to Congress. So Tom took charge of our state government, drawing a new map with congressional districts rigged to eliminate 6 to 8 Democrats. In a silent coup, he even shipped our inept governor out of state so he wouldn't get in the way while Tom himself was browbeating legislators in back rooms to force out his new map for Texas congressional seats. No Democrats were consulted and no public hearings were held. The little czar simply ruled. And what a map he drew. It's filled with districts that look like U-turns, curlicues, squiggles, and snake trails. Take my town of Austin, which DeLay hacked up into 3 convoluted districts. This effectively leaves our state capital as the only one in the country with no U.S. representative of our own. Instead, we're now in a Houston district, a San Antonio district, and, in a tribute to the art of gross gerrymandering, a Rio Grande Valley district that looks like a Picasso snake running for 350 miles all the way from Austin to the Mexican border. It's bizarre. For example, the Tavern, a local restaurant, is in the Houston district, but its parking lot is in the San Antonio district. The University of Texas football stadium is in the San Antonio district, but its baseball field, right across the street, is in the Rio Grande Valley district. This is Jim Hightower saying, Tsar Tom is out to Sovietize our political system.
Get things in my mind, and I say, let's try this.
Here's Nancy in the background. Nancy.
Oh,
Nancy.
Am I on the air?
Oh. Hello.
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 Sorry.
You're sorry you're on the air?
I'm glad I didn't say something I really shouldn't have said.
Really?
You should have heard what she was telling me a minute ago.
Wow.
Bite me, doughboy.
On the IE America Radio Network.
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
He's the man who uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
Welcome back to the Democracy Zone here on the IE America Radio Network. We are very honored here to have Michelle Flournoy, a senior advisor at the CSIS International Security Program, where she works on a broad range of defense policy and international security issues. Previously, Michelle was a distinguished research professor at the Institute for International Strategic Studies at the National Defense University, where she founded and led the university's Quadrennial Defense Review Working Group. Prior to joining NDU, she was dual-hatted as Principal Deputy Assistant Secretary of Defense for Strategy and Threat Reduction and Deputy Assistant Secretary of Defense for Strategy. In this capacity, she oversaw 3 policy offices in the Office of the Secretary of Defense: Strategy, Requirements, Plans, and Counterproliferation, and Russia, Ukraine, and Eurasian Matters. That's an extraordinary resume, Michelle. I'm impressed. You've really paid your dues and clearly know your material. If any of our listeners would like to call in and have questions for Michelle or thoughts on these topics, here is one of the true experts on this stuff. 1-800-TALK-YES is our number, 1-800-825-5937. Michelle, when does the window close that we have right now where the Iraqis, it seems that in Iraq there's still this kind of balancing act. Enough Iraqis are dying either as a result of accidental things, trigger-happy GIs, incidents of or being humiliated when, you know, houses are kicked in and people are tied, put on the floor. And humiliation, I think, is something that we misunderstand or we miss. You know, I mean, the Third Amendment was not added to the Constitution for small cause. Quartering soldiers was considered a great humiliation. And so as time goes on, it seems that more and not to mention the Iraqis who are dying at the hands of Iraqis, like we saw yesterday and the day before. So there is, on the one hand, this very powerful force of generating Iraqi
antagonism toward occupation and enhancing the whole nationalism thing, where we won't even be fighting terrorists per se. We'll be fighting nationalists. It'll be back to the American Revolution or their version of it. And then on the other hand, doing the things that frankly Al-Qaeda and other organizations have done so well over the years, the Wahhabis, you know, opening schools, taking care of the hungry, offering prenatal care, offering midwives, helping young children, helping families. I mean, they're still doing these things, not so much in Iraq now. I think not in Iraq forever, but I mean all around the Middle East. And so you have these two forces of us as good guys and us as bad guys in the perception of the Iraqis. At what point, where are we on that spectrum, and when does the tipping point occur where it just starts cascading out of our control?
I think it's tough to say how much time we have left, but I think it's a matter of a few months, not more than that. I think the Iraqi people have shown remarkable patience already. Mm-hmm. And I think the things that they're going to look for or make their decisions based on are, first of all, whether the security situation improves, whether they feel safer in their homes, on the streets, going about their business. Second, whether they see progress towards a return to normalcy. You know, the electricity stays on, the schools remain open, the markets have goods, trade is economic activity is picking up.
Isn't security probably the biggest part of that?
That is. It is the foundation on which everything else rests. But the third thing, and I think this is very important, and this hasn't been adequately appreciated, is seeing visible signs that power is starting to be transferred to Iraqis, that Iraqis are being put in the driver's seat in determining their own future, that the governing council is being given real power, that Iraqis are really taking the lead in drafting their own constitution and setting the timelines for a transition of power. Yeah. That's, I think, the crucial thing. If there are real signs of that, I think that will renew their patience. If they think that this is really just about an occupation, we'll run out of time more quickly.
And not just an occupation and a plunder. I mean, we're selling off their national industries. There's the widespread perception that we were there for the oil. How is that going? I mean, what's your sense of the trends of public opinion in Iraq?
Well, I think it's very mixed. I think the security situation remains the greatest cause for concern, although one thing that's interesting is as Iraqis or foreign fighters are attacking Iraqis, as more Iraqis become victims of this, there is a sense it's changing the way the Iraqi people view this, and they're saying, hey, wait a minute. Now you're attacking us. You're not just attacking the Americans. Now you're attacking us. Whose side are you on? And I think that's an interesting dynamic that we don't understand exactly where that's going to go yet. But I do think, it so much depends on where you are in Iraq. In some places, there has been visible progress, you know, in terms of repair of infrastructure, resumption of economic activity, some sense of returning to normal life. But in Baghdad, in the Sunni Triangle, we have a long way to go before people feel like that progress is real.
Yeah, yeah. Do you think that our privatization efforts are harming this? They're getting fairly wide publicity there. In fact, the governing council, or a representative of the governing council last week, came out and openly opposed our efforts to privatize Iraqi industries.
Now, I think that the involvement of U.S. corporations in the privatization effort and in the contracting effort cuts a couple of ways. It does create a perception that makes people question our original intentions. Why are we really here? Are we in it for some economic gain, or are we really trying to liberate the Iraqi people and help them strive for democracy? I think that the rush to privatization has a couple of downsides. One is it creates this perception. The other is that right now what we really need to do is get Iraqis back to work. And privatization will actually probably in the short term put more Iraqis out of work. As a short-term measure, I think we just need to stand up the state industries as inefficient and as they were, stand them up, get people back to work, and then take privatization as a long-term effort that, again, is run primarily by Iraqis and not by Americans.
Right. We're fighting this war on terror. and according to the administration. And certainly there are people out there who wish us ill and have demonstrated their ability to inflict wounds upon us. How are we doing this, and how should we be doing it? What are the facts and myths on both the administration's side and on the side of those folks who... you worked in the Clinton administration,
yes.
Right? Okay. And then the question that I'd like to get to after that is, you know, what was the Clinton administration doing about these things? Because they're certainly getting trashed by the conservatives right now for being responsible for all things wrong. But let's deal with that war on terror first.
To be effective against Al-Qaeda and other terrorist organizations with global reach, you need a multifaceted strategy. You need to take some military actions to deny them sanctuary, to take down organizations and so forth. But most of the war is going to be fought with law enforcement and intelligence. And there, I think we've had some pretty good success. We've captured, killed a lot of the Al-Qaeda leadership. We've taken down a number of their cells. We've made it tough for them to operate. But this is a very resilient, adaptive organization, and they're metamorphosizing as we speak.
Mm.
And so it's definitely not over. Where the administration has really fallen down is not using other instruments of national power to deny the terrorist organizations their next generation of recruits. Things like public diplomacy, things like foreign assistance that creates educational alternatives to the madrasas that are being used as recruiting tools. Really engaging the populations of these countries that are the base for these terrorists, and trying to marginalize these organizations within that context by presenting the populations with other means of political and social and expression.
So we get into a competition with Saudi Arabia to see who can fund the most schools and social welfare institutions?
I think we need a focus of our diplomatic effort needs to be a totally new strategy for the Middle East, where we are trying to push Saudi Arabia and Egypt and others in the right direction of reform, of political liberalization, of economic revitalization, so that they have something to offer the populations that are under their rule.
If you go back and read if you go back in and read the proposal for New American Century back in 1998, they were essentially suggesting that would happen if we were to seize Iraq. Are you suggesting that by taking Iraq we've reversed that process, or are we moving it in a forward direction?
Well, I think the intervention in Iraq has certainly proved a powerful recruiting tool for the next generation of terrorists, and it's made Iraq central to the war on terrorism, where I would have argued it was peripheral before. I think if ultimately we succeed in helping Iraqis to establish some form of liberal democracy, it may have an important effect on moderates elsewhere in the region. But it's, you know, it's just not clear whether we're going to get there at this point. And I think we also need to address these other countries more directly. We need to build in reform as a priority in our relationship with Saudi Arabia and with some of these other countries that have been supporting these organizations directly or indirectly for many years.
What consequences are in particular Iraq? What are the main consequences of our behavior in Iraq or our intervention in Iraq on the United States military itself as a system, as an institution?
Right. I think the U.S. military is very overstretched, because there's a fundamental mismatch between the demands of the post 9/11 world and places like Afghanistan, Iraq, the ongoing war on terrorism, versus how we've been structured and the kind of mix of capabilities we have. And so you see troops meeting themselves coming and going in airports as they come back from a deployment and then turn around and go back.
Right.
You see assets that are constantly used, reserve units that are constantly being called up. So I think we need a fundamental reexamination of the mix of the military. We might need a slightly larger army to support a strategy like this in the future, or even a strategy of engagement.
Right. Michelle Flournoy, we're speaking with. It's 18 minutes after the hour, almost 19. We've got just about 30 seconds here left. Michelle, a caller has left a message, wants to know if you think that the California fires are possibly related to some sort of domestic terrorism. Do you see It sounds kind of like a stretch to me. Nobody's claimed responsibility for it. But do you see that kind of thing, small acts of terrorism across the United States, like Israel experienced before it really got intense with the suicide bombings?
I have no idea what caused these fires. I would be surprised if it were an act of domestic terrorism. But I don't think that the threat of foreign terrorism to the U.S. is over. I think it's quite possible that we will see further al-Qaeda attacks, possibly using something like a weapons of mass destruction, which would be truly catastrophic. And we're not doing enough to stop that threat right
now. Amen. Michelle Flournoy, a senior advisor to the CSIS International Security Program. Michelle, thank you very much for being on the program today.
Thank you.
It was wonderful speaking with you. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
I had a bad headache. I tried Advil Liquid Gels. They work faster than Tylenol.
I needed stronger medicine, and Advil Liquid Gels get that medicine to my headache faster.
I get better relief with Advil Liquid Gels.
Every day, more people are choosing Liquid Gels to relieve tough headache pain. Advil has these advanced capsules with liquid medicine inside to rush relief where you need it. Proven faster, stronger, better than Tylenol.
Now, every time I get a tough headache, I choose Advil Liquid Gels.
For better headache relief, advance to Advil.
Welcome to Baguette Country. Introducing the Santa Fe Fire Grilled Chicken Baguette Sandwich from Burger King. A juicy breast of fire-grilled chicken, sweet peppers and onions, and a hearty fire-roasted tomato sauce on our new fresh-baked bread. Made to order with only 5 grams of fat. The new Santa Fe Chicken Baguette. Burger King. Come on over. The fire's ready. Not a low-sodium food. For complete nutritional info, visit BurgerKing.com.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hartman.
Tom DeLay, the loopy majority leader of the U.S. House, didn't have enough to do in Washington, so in his spare time, he's become the new czar of Texas. He swept into our state capitol early this year with a brand new scheme to redraw the boundary lines of our congressional districts. Never mind that redistricting had already been done just 2 years ago by a bipartisan panel of judges. Tom doesn't have any patience with bipartisanship, though. He didn't like those old lines because, he whined, the people just weren't electing enough Republicans to Congress. So Tom took charge of our state government, drawing a new map with congressional districts rigged to eliminate 6 to 8 Democrats. In a silent coup, he even shipped our inept governor out of state so he wouldn't get in the way while Tom himself was browbeating legislators in back rooms to force out his new map for Texas congressional seats. No Democrats were consulted, and no public hearings were held. The little czar simply ruled. And what a map he drew. It's filled with districts that look like U-turns, curlicues, squiggles, and snake trails. Take my town of Austin, which DeLay hacked up into 3 convoluted districts. This effectively leaves our state capital as the only one in the country with no U.S. representative of our own. Instead, we're now in a Houston district, a San Antonio district, and, in a tribute to the art of gross gerrymandering, a Rio Grande Valley district that looks like a Picasso snake running for 350 miles all the way from Austin to the Mexican border. It's bizarre. For example, The Tavern, a local restaurant, is in the Houston district, but its parking lot is in the San Antonio district. The University of Texas football stadium is in the San Antonio district, but its baseball field, right across the street, is in the Rio Grande Valley district. This is Jim Hightower saying, Tsar Tom is out to Sovietize our political system.
Mm-hmm.
is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
Welcome back. It's Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network, day 107 in the search for the White House leaker, day 262 in the search for weapons of mass distraction, day 777. Some would say a sacred number, day 777 in the search for Osama bin Laden. And George Bush says, well, if they kill more of our guys, that's a good thing. It means that we've really got them upset. It's sort of a variation of his, bring them on. And this guy has just a disconnect with reality, I think, would be a charitable way to say it. It was incredible. Absolutely incredible. Speaking of the Bush image, the Bush image-making machinery. We were talking about that before Michelle came on as our guest, and she has now gone off back to the conference. The Bush administration has hired a former ABC producer, a former NBC cameraman, and a former Fox News person to manage these events. To stage these events. I mean, it's just, if you can imagine. And nothing slips by these guys. 1-800-TALK-YES is our number, 1-800-825-5937. And Doug in Santa Fe has some thoughts. Hey, Doug, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program.
Hey, Tom. I guess I missed your guess. The question was kind of directed in her. I have, well, some of the history you've given on the show before has talked about how religion has played in politics with other empires in the past, and I was wondering how much you think has an influence in what's going on in the Bush administration right now.
You know, that's an excellent question, Doug, and I have my opinions about it, which you've probably heard many times, so I won't go into a recitation or a recital of them all, but there's a good possibility that John Podesta, who's in charge of this whole think tank here and who was the former chief of staff in the Clinton White House and has is the co-founder of the Center for American Progress, is going to come by probably in the next hour as a guest. His schedule is pretty harried, and so he said if he could drop in, he would drop in when he could drop in. And I mean, you know, it's not in a condescending way, but just, you know, he's been pulled in 100 different directions. And, yeah, well, he's got Chuck Hagel here, and he's got to manage him, and Hillary was here this morning, and it's just, you know, one thing after another. But if he comes in here, I encourage you to call as soon as you hear him on the air and ask him that question, because I think it's a great question, and I'd love to hear his thoughts on it, because here's a guy who's in the middle of it and who was in the middle of it in the Clinton administration. So, but I don't know the answer, I other than what I'm seeing in the news.
Right. Well, I'm one of those strange individuals. I'm not really religious. I don't believe in one particular religion, but I have been watching kind of on a regular basis the public access Christian channels, and the things that they're teaching their parishioners and the phrasing that they're using when they're preaching is getting rather scary. It's almost like they're calling up soldiers to do another crusade.
Oh, we have madrasas here. I mean, you know, Pat Robertson and Jerry Falwell, and they're not the most toxic of them. They're just the most well-known. But there, we have an American Taliban. There's no doubt about it.
All right. Thank you very much. I'll try and call back if I hear the gentleman on the air.
Yeah. Yeah. If we get John Podesta on, be sure to call back and ask him that question. We may have other guests. The PR folks here are trying to grab people as they go by. The conference officially ended at 1 o'clock with the end of Chuck Hagel's speech. Which I'll let you know what happened on that tomorrow, because I unfortunately was on the air when he was on. But a good question, Doug. What I see is a schism, a fracturing happening not only in Islam, where you've got radical Islam and more modern Islam, but also in Christianity here in the United States. It concerns me, frankly, that there has become this element of
Joshua. I mean, read the book of Joshua in the Old Testament. You want to understand the mindset of these folks, of these new radical Christians. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. This is Tom Hartman.
What does corporate power have to do with disarmament? How does working for racial justice affect trade agreements? And what do they all have to do with the Cuban blockade? Having trouble making a connection? It's our specialty. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, for 88 years, connecting the issues for democracy and social justice. Why don't you connect with us? WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
Scientists say we should learn from history before we go all out with hydrogen. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. Fuel cells that use hydrogen produce electricity and emit only water. If hydrogen fuel cells replace the internal combustion engine, they could eliminate problems with smog and oil spills. But some people say we need to examine all the impacts of this fuel before we start using it. Tracy Tromp is a physicist at the California Institute of Technology. She's the lead author of a study in the journal Science about the potential impact of a hydrogen economy on the environment. Tromp says hydrogen could leak out during fueling, storage, or any other point along the way. She says too much of this loose gas could disrupt the recovery of the Earth's protective ozone layer. Tromp says this is not a reason to dismiss the idea of using hydrogen-powered fuel cells.
We're not advocating scrapping hydrogen fuel cells. We think they're a great idea. But we're at a unique position at this point in time. The hydrogen fuel cells are a technology that's currently under development. We're not set down any particular technology path. So what we're hoping is to force a dialogue to start thinking about the environment and which of these technologies are most environmentally friendly.
Tromp says that if we can anticipate problems, we can work to avoid them. She says that did not happen before modern economies were built on a foundation of fossil fuel. The consequences included air pollution and widespread emissions of greenhouse gases. Tromp says people are working to better understand how hydrogen behaves in the environment. She says that information is critical to predicting and monitoring the impact of hydrogen fuel cells as a common source of energy. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
My fellow Americans, this is Laura Picklesbush. It seems that some of our otherwise upstanding citizens are listening to the Mike Malloy Show at 9 p.m. Eastern Time every weeknight. Surely you can find a more patriotic and productive use of your evening hours. For example, organizing neighborhood watch parties to search for the terrorists who are certain to be lurking in your playgrounds and possibly hiding dangerous weapons of mass destruction in your victory gardens. This is Laura Picklesbush saying, when it comes to the Mike Malloy Show, just say no.
For the latest in cutting-edge technology, computers, entertainment, and much more, tune in to tomorrow here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the interactive radio program with experts featuring new technology and the latest consumer electronics. Check out our internet site anytime at graveline.com and join us live this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific on the IE America Radio Network.
The best of the rest of the news. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Oh man, look at my life. 24 and there's so much more. Live alone in a paradise that makes me think of true. Love lost, such a cost. Give me things that don't get lost. Like a coin that won't get tossed, rolling home to you.
And welcome back. It's Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Scott Sforza, a former ABC producer, according to the New York Times, who was hired by the Bush campaign in Austin, Texas, and now works for Dan Bartlett, the White House communications director, created the White House Message of the Day backdrops
and helped design the $250,000 set at the United States Central Command Forward Headquarters in Doha, Qatar, during the Iraqi War. He worked closely with Bob DeServi, a former NBC cameraman. Mr. DeServi helped produce one of Mr. Bush's largest events. I'm reading here from an article in the New York Times back in June by Elizabeth Buemiller in the New York Times. Keepers of Bush image lift stagecraft to new heights. He helped produce one of Mr. Bush's largest events, a speech to a crowd in Revolution Square in Bucharest last November. To stage the event, Mr. DeServi went so far as to rent Musco lights in Britain, which were then shipped across the English Channel and driven across Europe to Romania, where they lighted Mr. Bush in the giant stage across from the country's former communist headquarters. Now, if you look in USA Today today, you'll see the picture of Bush with the Mission Accomplished sign above him. You'll also notice that it's another one of these halo pictures. Have you been seeing these Bush halo pictures? They've positioned the White House reporters, the folks with cameras, in such a way that the great seal of the president is on the wall behind Bush's head. And there's a couple of pictures. We have several of them on my website. If you go to TomHartmann.com and go to the message boards, and in the radio show section, look for the thread titled Bush as Christ, and there's pictures of Bush with a golden halo. There's a series of them, and they've come out from Reuters and the Associated Press, and here's one in today's USA Today, or perhaps it's yesterday's USA Today. I'm not sure which it was. And they've got this round thing behind his head, and then above that, of course, is the Mission Accomplished. And now he's saying, oh, yeah, that was just an accident, just some dumb sailor came up with the idea. Yeah, right. 1-800-TALK, yes, our number, 1-800-825-5937, and Mary in Santa Fe, New Mexico is on the line. Mary, welcome to the Tom Hartmann program. You're on the air.
Thank you. I was listening to the president's press conference, and he seems to stress how the terrorists use chaos and fear.
Yes.
Well, wasn't that our mantra when we went into Iraq? Shock and awe.
Right. Create chaos and fear. Well, and they're doing it here. I mean, what's the whole point of the terror alerts? Terror alert! It's orange! Oh! You know. Yeah. Who are the real terrorists?
That was the comment I had.
Okay. Mary, thank you. Thank you for your comment. It's a point well taken. In fact, there was a fascinating article. I'm trying to remember where I read it. It almost seems like it was in the Financial Times. It was sometime last week. And I think it was on commondreams.org. It might have been on buzzflash.com that I saw the link to it. And it was about how civilians perceive American military efforts and Israeli military efforts also in the West Bank and Gaza as a form of terrorism, in as much as, and this is not my saying that they are, but that civilians perceive them as such in as much as they produce the same levels of post-traumatic stress disorder in people, which is a pretty clinical and predictable and accurate and solid way of measuring that. If you terrify people enough. Well, I saw that they had that kid that was interviewed on one of the networks, I think it might have been CBS, where he had watched one of his relatives being blown up by one of these Israeli gunships coming in and taking out a car that had a Hamas leader in it, and it killed several civilians nearby, one of whom was his brother or his father. And this little kid, this little 10-year-old kid, you know, wakes up at night screaming. Every time a helicopter goes by, he frantically starts running down alleyways. I mean, here you have the effect of terror. And there's a real debate going on right now in the Israeli Knesset, and I think it's a good debate. I think it's an important debate, a necessary debate, about whether this kind of very public execution of people is an appropriate way, an appropriate use of policy, an appropriate attempt to forward American policy. 1-800-TALK, yes, 1-800-825-5937, our number, and Dave in Henderson, North Carolina is on the line. Dave, welcome to the Tom Hartmann program.
Thank you, Tom. Nice to talk to you.
Great. Thank you for calling.
Listen, I had a comment. I was from listening to the news a couple days ago with all the increase in bombings we're now having over in Baghdad, and with Bush putting a spin on this thing, he's saying, well, that's with all these increase in bombings, everything else going on, that just shows that we're putting, that we're making a dent in this thing here. Yeah, but what happens if when nothing else is going on over there? I mean, it seems like no matter if nothing's going on or if everything's getting bombed, Bush seems to put a spin on this thing. I mean, showing that, yeah, we're getting positive results.
I mean, extend his logic. If you just take the logic of that, then what he's saying is that if the Iraqis were to kill every last American soldier and level most of the city of Baghdad, that would be a good thing, because that would prove that we've really got them upset now.
Exactly.
We're accomplishing our goal.
I mean, it seems like no matter which way, whatever happens over there, that there's always a spin that we're doing a positive thing over there. It's just to the point of just being ridiculous.
Well, we know that the shills who masquerade as reporters over at Faux News, buy this kind of thing hook, line, and sinker. But do you really think that the American people, by and large, are such suckers?
No, I don't. The main thing I think a lot of people, of course, you're going to have dedicated right wingers that no matter what happens, they're going to vote for Bush, no matter what. But I think more and more American people are starting to wake up and starting to make a difference. Same thing. I was looking at the newer Newsweek cover story right there with Bush, with what's going on over there with this $86 billion boondoggle that's going on now. I think the people are starting to wake up slowly but surely. And my main thing is I hope that the American people can wake up before election time, enough people to vote somebody else in.
Yeah, I hope so too. And frankly, I think people are underestimating what a challenge it's going to be, particularly if Bush changes his vice president. But even if he doesn't change his vice president, if he can stabilize the situation in Iraq, if the economy gets a little better, and odds are both of those things are going to happen. I mean, it's just a matter of time.
Well,
he's got $250 million.
Exactly. Oh, that's the main. He has a massive war chest. That's going to be tough. You're going to see him on the airwaves about every other commercial, and that's going to be tough to beat.
Yeah, it's we're in for a real bruising electoral battle here, and I am fully expecting an October surprise or a September or October surprise from the Bush administration, and in fact, I even thought for a while I've got my daily countdown. Today is day 107 that Karl Rove is still free for outing Valerie Plame, and day 262 in the search for weapons of mass destruction, day 7. So I was thinking of adding a count up. We are now 11 months from Bush's October surprise in October of 2004, but I thought that's just going to sound so cynical. But it is so Republican. I mean, Nixon tried it, Bush Senior did it. It's just so predictable. Anyhow, Dave, thanks for the call. I appreciate you sharing your thoughts with us, and well said. 1-800-TALK-YES, our number, 1-800-825-5937. And Armin in Florida is on the line. Hey, Armin, how are you today?
Fine. How are you?
I am great, but I'll get better.
There you go.
I have no choice. I mean, it's one way or the other, right?
Constant change, right?
There you go. Nothing stays the same.
Amen.
What was it, Grace Slick in that? The great Grace Slick in that Jefferson Airplane album. She sang that. So and so turns 30 years old today. Anyhow, there's that one moment where she just hits this note, and she goes, "Life is change," and then she says, "How it differs from the rocks," and it's like, that's it. We're going one way or another all the time. Anyhow, I interrupted you. What'd you call about, Armin?
Well, you made a good point, and you thoroughly made a good point. You educated a lot of people that may have been intellectually sitting on the fence. So
Okay. Don't
criticize yourself when you're a great guy like you are.
Well, bless you. Thank you.
Well, bless you, and bless the media outlet that us little people have, such as yours.
Yeah. So what's on your mind?
I was sitting here and, spinning channels to see where the cutting edge of deception was going today with the mainstream media. And I stopped at Maury Povich, or whatever his name is, his show.
Maury Povich.
Go ahead.
No, Maury Povich, I think, is how it's pronounced. Yeah.
Okay. And that's fine. And they had an investigative reporter on there that was basically, they were playing out to the crowd how the little people, in my opinion, get busted. They had a rabbi that wasn't really a rabbi performing marriages. They supposedly busted him. They got a guy selling illegal IDs in New York, and they supposedly busted him. And then they got another guy, and they busted him. And the point is, the crowd seemed to, you know, like the criminals being picked up and, you know, put where they belong in jail. But I'm sitting here thinking and putting it in the context and the perspective that I have on the big criminals in Washington with the $87 billion budget.
Mm-hmm.
And I read on the internet that, you know, they say Cheney's not with Halliburton anymore. And then I read that he's invested heavily in the Vanguard Fund, and they're 10% heavy into Halliburton. So the guy, you know, we have, in my opinion, the most corrupt administration in the history of this republic. And I ask myself, when I see the little people thrown in jail and getting busted and the cameras and the media, I ask myself, where's the media and where's the cameras when the perpetrators of the maximum effect are operating every day out of Washington, especially right now, more so than ever? Where are they? Where's the real media?
Yeah. Look at the stats on organized crime. I mean, or on crime and how crime gets reported in the United States. The white collar criminals, just, you know, vastly outnumber. White collar crime just vastly outnumbers the blue collar crime, or whatever you want to call it, in terms of dollars, in terms of its impact on the economy, in terms of its destructiveness in people's lives. But it's really not where the focus of law enforcement is.
No, but and the people in power, you know, some people philosophically try to say it's the people out there because they don't hit the streets and they don't revolt. Well, you know, what good would that do other than I don't believe in violence as a solution to an evil empire either. I don't believe myself philosophically. But when you have a First Amendment zone that, you know, W created for opposition, and, you know, it's totally excluded from the media coverage, and the way that they portray everything. I mean, where's this all going to go? I mean, the people, really, that I feel that he truly represents are so ruthless and so amoral, and they have zero compassion or care for average people. I mean, they're not even on the same planet, in my opinion. And it may sound offensive to some of them, but I think there's a disproportionate number of growing people that are not only disconnected, but that they're delusional. And, you know, I think about our country. It's your country. It's my country. It's all the people that call up the show's country. It's the little workaday people's country. It's the minimum wage workers' country. You know, it's the people, those kids they're sending over there to protect his oil investors, his paymasters, him and Cheney's. It's outrageous the way this country is going. And it's beyond criminal. It's just, it's totally against, if, you know, you believe in a God, it's totally against God's law. It's against human law. It's against every nature law. It's against everything. Because how can you, when you take it to its maximum extreme and its capability to project it, it's beyond frightening. It just doesn't make any reason, any philosophical sense, any good at anything. And I think, where's the media? You know?
Well, yeah, Armin.
Where's the justice?
Yeah, no, I hear you, and I think that you echo the sentiments of a lot of people, and I thank you for calling and sharing that, and appreciate your sharing your comments with us. I don't see it quite as bleakly. I think that we have a media in the United States that is driven in large part by celebrity, and I think that there's some basic human instinct for that. And by the way, let me just pause here and forgive my, we're doing a remote here from Washington DC, and things aren't always exactly perfect. Steph, I'm not seeing any response from you on the IM. I don't know if we have any other callers on the line. Jerry in North Carolina. Great. Okay. Let's bring in Jerry from North Carolina, and then I'll finish up my wrap after the break, because we've still got about a minute and a half here left. Jerry, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Thank you very much. I've got a quick question I wanted to ask you. On the news today, we evidently now have a new EPA chief. Do you know who were the 8 votes against him?
I don't. I have been out of the news loop for the last few days. I've been at this conference and sitting in on all these workshops, and it's been fascinating stuff, but I haven't even had time to read the New York Times today.
Okay. I read several stories on the news, but nobody told me who the 8 Democratic votes against him were. It was 88 to 8.
Hmm. Interesting. Well, it would have been more than, if it was 88 to 8 in the Senate, it would have been more than eight Democratic votes. There were the 8 votes. Those would be the 8 votes against, which were presumably Democrats, but a lot more than 8 voted in favor.
Oh, 88 votes for him.
Right, right. But there's only, what, 51 or 52 senators who are Republicans?
Right.
Yeah, so there must have been a number of Democrats who voted for him.
I'm just interested in the ones who voted against him.
Oh, I see. Yeah. No, I don't know that. There are a couple of websites that do a really good job of tracking congressional votes. And unfortunately, I'm not at home. I don't have, you know, all of my resources available to me, and I don't remember the URLs of any of them right offhand. Thomas.gov, I believe, has that information, although it's more of an archival site. That's, tracking the government. You might want to try... Also, one of the Nader groups, publiccitizen.org, may have that information, or they may have links to where you can find it. This is Tom, and thanks for the call, Jerry. I appreciate it. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
To create a real democracy in this country, we need to sit down and talk with other people. Democracy begins with conversation. But how do we begin the conversation? The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom has a 10-week study guide called Challenge Corporate Power, Assert the People's Rights, to help you get the conversation started in your community. It's free on the web at WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
If you think people are more important than corporations, you need to see The Progressive Populist. Twice a month, we feature columnists such as Jim Hightower, Molly Ivins, and other plutocrat pluckers from around the country. We'll send you a free sample copy if you'll call us toll-free 1-800-205-7067 or see our website at populist.com. That's 1-800-205-7067 or populist.com or The Progressive Populist, the newspaper for Main Street USA.
Welcome to Baguette Country. Introducing the Santa Fe Fire Grilled Chicken Baguette Sandwich from Burger King. A juicy breast of fire grilled chicken, sweet peppers and onions, and a hearty fire roasted tomato sauce on our new fresh baked bread. Made to order with only 5 grams of fat. The new Santa Fe Chicken Baguette. Burger King. Come on over. The fire is ready. Not a low sodium food. For complete nutritional info, visit BurgerKing.com.
Excuse me, ma'am.
Yeah?
Have you bought your Halloween candy yet?
Not yet.
Well, I've got the best candy idea for you to give away on Halloween.
Really?
Juicy gummies.
Juicy gummies?
That's right. Juicy gummies are the first gummies made with real fruit juices. They're fat-free and they are so good.
Mmm.
You have to try them all. The peach rings, froggies, creepies, and much, much more. They're all delicious.
Yeah, they are.
Juicy gummies come in playful packages, fun shapes and colors. All the kids will be at your door when the word gets out that you're giving away juicy gummies on Halloween.
Mmm.
Juicy gummies come in 30 and 50 pack bags, so there's plenty of candy for the whole neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
And did I mention that these gummy candies are actually made with real fruit juices and fat-free?
Wow.
So if you haven't bought your candy for Halloween, rush on out to Walmart, Kmart, Eckerd's, Dollar General, 7-Eleven, Fred's, Kerr Drugs, Brooks Pharmacy, and many other stores nationwide. Sorry, ma'am, you can't eat all of our samples. Well, this store here sells juicy gummies.
Ooh, thanks.
Look for Juicy Gummies, America's first gummy made with real fruit juices. Boy, they're delicious.
What do you think I like about commuting with nature as much as I do? Being on the tractor as much time as I do or spending time with the animals?
Spitting diesel into the ozone layer? You're at one with nature.
You have meddled with the primal forces of nature, and you will atone.
On the IE America Radio Network.
Animal Talk, not your father's radio program, take 48.
Tune in to Animal Talk this Sunday, Sunday, Sunday,
Sunday, Sunday, Sunday, Sunday, Sunday,
for Animal Celebrity Boxing.
Boxing kicks butt.
Lightweight bout featuring fearless Felix the Cat.
Yeah, what a cat.
And that dog on ice, Tanya Harding.
Yeah, that dog will fight anyone for a buck.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights on IE America Radio Network.
Sunday, Sunday, Sunday.
An email that I received from Ken Melman, who's the campaign manager of Bush Cheney 04. Last week I warned you, he writes to me, that liberal special interests had pledged to spend over $400 million to defeat President Bush. Since my message to you, the Washington Post has revealed that these liberal groups have already raised over $185 million of their $400 million goal. They have already begun spending it on ads to defeat our president. This confirms that we will face a tough, well-funded Democrat attack campaign. While the Democrats will have endless soft money to spend attacking President Bush, I hope we'll have your help. Will you stand with President Bush and help build the strongest grassroots campaign in history by making a contribution today? Oh, President Bush, he just can't raise money. If they only had a brain.
The Tom Hartman Show, Monday through Friday, noon to 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
He's a cowboy president, but he wears a black hat. In America, can't get away with that. On the eve of destruction again, and he's got the knack. He's the cowboy president, but he wears a black hat.
And welcome back. It's Tom Hartman, our cowboy president. According to USA Today, President Bush tried to distance himself Tuesday from a banner proclaiming mission accomplished that hung on an aircraft carrier where he staged a fighter jet landing. What's incredible to me is the media continues to say, I mean, even Democrats say, that Bush landed a fighter on an aircraft carrier. He didn't. A United States Navy pilot landed a fighter jet on an aircraft carrier, carrying as a passenger in the back seat the president. So he was delivered. When are they going to start? I mean, it's just like appropriate, proper syntax and getting your facts right. Instead, it should say, President Bush tried to distance himself Tuesday from a banner proclaiming mission accomplished that hung on an aircraft carrier where he was delivered by fighter jet, or chauffeured onto the, you know, the jet fighter by a Navy pilot. Anyhow, it goes on to say, back to USA Today's language, he said the banner was the Navy's idea. And a reference to the mission of the USS Abraham Lincoln. Yeah. If you believe that, I've got a bridge I want to sell you. Bush said, quote, major combat operations in Iraq have ended. And although at the press conference he said, well, I really didn't say that, combat was over. On Monday, Bush said the banner was put up by crew members. It's put up by crew members of the Abraham Lincoln. After we hear this whole thing about how carefully they stage manage everything, they get his head right where it'll show a picture of a halo behind him. They shoot him. They moved repeatedly the stand where the photographers were in front of the Mount Rushmore so that his face would show up as one of the heads with the presidents on Mount Rushmore. They shipped special kind of lights all the way across Europe to Bucharest to stage one of these things. And he says, oh, no, that was just a bunch of soldiers who did that, this beautiful banner. Oh, so sad. We register to vote if you are not registered, and get everybody you know registered to vote, because change is in the air. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Truth in broadcasting.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Copyright 2003.
My fellow Americans, this is Laura Pickles Bush with an important public service announcement about sleep deprivation. Many of you are not obtaining the 10 hours of nightly sleep necessary for true patriotic Americans like my husband Georgie because you're staying awake to listen to the Mike Malloy Show from 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern Time. This dangerous behavior puts you at risk of daytime blackouts, diminished worker productivity, ghastly hallucinations, and erectile dysfunction. So when it comes to the Mike Malloy Show, just say no.
For the latest in cutting-edge technology, computers, entertainment, and much more, tune into tomorrow here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the interactive radio program with experts featuring new technology and the latest consumer electronics. Check out our internet site anytime at graveline.com and join us live this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific on the IE America Radio Network.
This is the IE America Radio Network News Break, your significant news source.
This is Don Waller in New York. Two American soldiers were killed when their Abrams battle tank was damaged by resistance fighters, U.S. officials said Wednesday, as the number of U.S. soldiers killed in combat since major fighting ended topped the wartime total. In a separate attack, seven Ukrainian troops were wounded in the first ambush of a multinational unit in the Polish sector south of Baghdad, coalition officials said. The latest deaths bring to 115 the number of American soldiers killed in combat in Iraq since President Bush declared an end to major fighting May 1st. Defense Department figures show 114 U.S. soldiers died in the active combat phase, which began on March 20th. On May 1st, after a dramatic tailhook landing in a Navy jet, George W. Bush stood on the deck of the aircraft carrier USS Abraham Lincoln under a banner reading "Mission Accomplished" and proclaimed victory in Iraq. That declaration has proven premature given the continuing attacks on U.S. soldiers and other targets in Iraq, and every aspect of the president's appearance on the carrier has provoked intense criticism from Bush's adversaries. Yesterday, Bush disavowed responsibility for part of that appearance, saying that the "Mission Accomplished" banner was the work of the carrier crew. However, according to a May 15th New York Times article, the banner was one of many details attended to by Scott Sforza, a former ABC producer who was hired by the Bush campaign. Sforza and his staff were on board the Abraham Lincoln for days prior to Mr. Bush's landing and supervised every aspect of the photo op, including the banner. Most Ground Zero workers still suffer from health problems 2 years after September 11th, and many do not have health insurance or job security, doctors told a congressional panel Tuesday. Workers testified at a Manhattan hospital before the committee, saying they had trouble breathing and no longer had the strength to do their old jobs. More after this.
Our national parks have always been there for us, standing as silent reminders of who we are and what it means to be an American. They are full of history, of memories, of majesty. But now these great American treasures need our help. I'm Richard Dreyfuss, asking you to help preserve America's national parks. Visit AmericansForNationalParks.org today, because there's just too much to lose.
This is a public service announcement from Americans for National Parks and this radio station.
Most blacklists are designed to intimidate, but thousands of Americans are clamoring to join one drawn up by the National Rifle Association. Actor Dustin Hoffman was so dismayed to find his name missing from the NRA's 19-page blacklist that he wrote to the powerful pro-gun lobby group begging to be included. As a supporter of comprehensive anti-gun safety measures, I was deeply disappointed when I discovered my name was not on the list, Hoffman wrote in a letter to the NRA. For IE American Network News, this is Don Waller in New York.
This has been the IE America Radio Network News Break, produced by TakeBackTheMedia.com. For more information, visit IEAmericaRadio.com or TakeBackTheMedia.com.
And we're playing all your favorites, but right now I have a pair of free tickets to tonight's big concert for the third caller. Oh, let's go to the phone lines. They are heating up, and let's see. Hello.
Hello.
Is this Ms. Shannon Johnson?
Yes, yes it is.
Oh, you sound very excited.
I am.
Well, Ms. Johnson, I have good news.
I'm the third caller.
No, I just saved a load of money on car insurance by switching to Geico.
See what you could save. Call 1-800-947-AUTO. Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% on car insurance.
Tom DeLay, the loopy majority leader of the U.S. House, didn't have enough to do in Washington, so in his spare time, he's become the new czar of Texas. He swept into our state capitol early this year with a brand new scheme to redraw the boundary lines of our congressional districts. Never mind that redistricting had already been done just 2 years ago by a bipartisan panel of judges. Tom doesn't have any patience with bipartisanship, though. He didn't like those old lines because, he whined, the people just weren't electing enough Republicans to Congress. So Tom took charge of our state government, drawing a new map with congressional districts rigged to eliminate 6 to 8 Democrats. In a silent coup, he even shipped our inept governor out of state so he wouldn't get in the way while Tom himself was browbeating legislators in back rooms to force out his new map for Texas congressional seats. No Democrats were consulted and no public hearings were held. The little czar simply ruled. And what a map he drew. It's filled with districts that look like U-turns, curlicues, squiggles, and snake trails. Take my town of Austin, which DeLay hacked up into 3 convoluted districts. This effectively leaves our state capital as the only one in the country with no U.S. representative of our own. Instead, we're now in a Houston district, a San Antonio district, and, in a tribute to the art of gross gerrymandering, a Rio Grande Valley district that looks like a Picasso snake running for 350 miles all the way from Austin to the Mexican border. It's bizarre. For example, the Tavern, a local restaurant, is in the Houston district, but its parking lot is in the San Antonio district. The University of Texas football stadium is in the San Antonio district, but its baseball field, right across the street, is in the Rio Grande Valley district. This is Jim Hightower saying, Czar Tom is out to Sovietize our political system.
Tia Carrera is on the front in Playboy. I think what you have done is give a little more license to people who have a few more years on them.
Probably. A few more years on them.
Well,
a few more years on them.
No, I'm talking about now.
Like the tread on a tire.
Yeah, never mind. I can't make it better.
Just when I think you couldn't possibly be any dumber, you go and do something like this.
On the IE America Radio Network.
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
For a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, this is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman. To talk with Tom Hartman, call 1-800-TALK-YES. Here's Tom.
And welcome back, friends. It's day 107 in the freedom of Karl Rove. 107 days since the beginning of the search for the White House leaker, day 262 in the search for weapons of mass destruction, and day 777 in the search for that man whose name shall not pass the lips of George W. Bush, also known as Osama bin Laden. I am very honored to have here in our transportable studio, here at the New American Strategies for Security and Peace Conference, co-sponsored by the American Prospect, the Century Foundation, and the Center for American Progress, John Podesta, the co-founder of the Center for American Progress. These folks are so great. You got to check out their website, AmericanProgress.org. David Sirota, who was on our show last Friday, does this daily kind of news update. It's great because I get the talking points for the right-wing talk show host because I'm a talk show host and I'm in all the talk radio magazines and things. And for months and months and months, I've been getting their daily. In fact, I've been doing conservative alerts with you all here on the radio. Here's what they're going to talk about today. And sure enough, it's like the mantras right across. You know, it's incredible. And now the other side is gaining a voice, and thank God, Baruch Hashem. It's just, this is, you know,
And John Podesta is the, one of the men responsible for it. John Podesta is the president and chief executive officer of the Center for American Progress. Mr. Podesta served as chief of staff to President William J. Clinton, otherwise known as Bill Clinton, from October 1998 to January 2001, where he was responsible for directing, managing, and overseeing all policy development, daily operations, congressional relations, and staff activities at the White House. He's also a visiting professor of law at Georgetown University. John, thank you very much for joining us on the program today.
It's great to be with you.
Ah, whoop, let me turn your mic up. Here we go. Okay, say that again. There.
Yeah, how's that?
That's fine. Hey, there you go.
That portable studio sitting in a room in a hotel in Washington D.C.
Yeah,
you know, it takes a little technical.
There you go.
Adjustments.
Yeah, technology is amazing, but every now and then it's you have to fiddle with it.
Is this working for you?
Yeah, this great. Is great. One of the things that almost daily you hear somewhere, on one of the news shows is. And I want to get this question out, and then I want to talk to you about the center. But because you were part of the Clinton administration, is there will always be some right-wing flack on, some congressman, some senator, some Jon Snow, some pundit, some editor, who will say, well, Bill Clinton just let all this stuff happen, and he dumped all this stuff in the lap of George W. Bush, and he didn't pay attention to Al-Qaeda, and there was this bombing and that bombing and all this kind of stuff. Can we put the lie to that? Can we just nail that one, put the stake through its heart?
Well, we were intensely looking at Al-Qaeda during the last couple of years of the Clinton administration. I think that the Bin Laden network had been growing up in the late 1990s, but particularly after the embassy bombings in Africa, right, when we really began to point towards Bin Laden and Al-Qaeda, and we began to do a lot. We brought over 50 jihadists to justice. As has been reported, the president signed an executive order which targeted Bin Laden, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
We developed a Predator missile, the Predator unarmed assault, aerial vehicle that would have been able to go after him. But I think 9/11 changed everything. I mean, I think it gave the opportunity to the United States to really get more aggressive in Afghanistan, I think, with the support really of the whole world community. I think prior to that, and notwithstanding that they have been active, I think that it was much more difficult to have really even convinced the American people that, for example, an invasion of Afghanistan was warranted based on the previous activities. One of the last things that Sandy Berger, our national security advisor, did when he briefed Condoleezza Rice, President Bush's incoming national security advisor, was to tell her that the one thing that she was going to spend a whole lot more time on than she realized was Osama bin Laden and Al-Qaeda. And I think unfortunately, and he was he was prescient in that matter, but it was because we knew what was going on. I think we had our intelligence assets out there, but Bin Laden proved to be a very difficult character to catch, as this administration's learned. Even now, having invaded Afghanistan, we still haven't actually been able to find him.
Yeah. It's a tough one. 12 minutes after the hour, this is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. We're talking with John Podesta, the Center for American Progress. John, tell us about the center. How did it come about? What's your mission?
Well, we have seen throughout the course of the 1980s and 1990s, maybe it even goes back to the Goldwater election in 1964, the right wing really pouring money into the Washington-based think tanks that married the ability to do effective communications, not just on radio, but on television, in the newspapers, etc., with the ability to kind of generate ideas. I think there are ideas that are radical. They're kind of out of the mainstream. I think they've obviously hurt the country economically, and I think they've taken us on the wrong path from a national security perspective. But I give them credit for having actually built up the infrastructure that has dominated the public dialogue over the course of that period of time. In contrast, I think on the progressive side, I think you saw single-issue organizations that have very good strength and analytic capability in the environmental movement, in the choice movement, et cetera, develop, but very little in the way of this broad-based think tank machinery that could compete effectively, especially with the communications resources to really get out and try to argue to the American public that the conservative and the radical way that, that the places like the Heritage Foundation, now embodied with people who are in the administration on Capitol Hill, the direction they were pointing in was really taking the country off course. You know, we thought that we needed to do something about that. We've gotten some strong support financially. I've got great people together. We really just began this summer. But we're trying to do a number of things, compete in the long term for that set of ideas that's going to bring the country in a better, more progressive direction and try to bring the world to a safer place. But at the same time, engage in that day-to-day battle you mentioned at the outset, and I appreciate that. For example, we, on our website, we have a product called the Progress Report, which is a daily analysis of the news, of what we think is good and people ought to look at, and also an effective critique of what the administration's saying when we think they're wrong, of what the Congress is doing when we think they're wrong, and what the right-wing think tanks are doing when we think they're wrong. And it's hard-hitting, and we think it's found its audience. It's growing rapidly in terms of you can get it by email subscription. That subscription rate's growing rapidly.
Yeah, and it's a remarkable product you're producing. John Podesta, one of the criticisms that is frequently leveled and certainly a widespread perception of the think tanks on the right, and even some into the center, as it were, is that they have metamorphosed or I want to say metastasized.
That's probably a pretty good word.
Over time, into basically front groups for corporate interests. They've even, in many cases, left behind founding principles and just basically embraced things, you know, code words, free market, for example, that really are serving the interests of probably not more than 2,000 corporations in the United States.
I think it's fair to say they become apologists for corporate America. I think if you look at, for example, the energy policies that are coming out of places like the Heritage Foundation or the American Enterprise Institute, they're apologists for the polluters. They don't have balance. And in fact, I think one of the things that we intend to resist, which I think they have fallen into the trap on, is to actually distort the science, distort the economics, in order to, you know, to do something that really begins with an outcome, begins with a policy, and then distorts the facts to make the policy fit. You know, we've seen that in the national security arena, we've seen that in the environmental arena, we've seen that on economics, and it's, you know, it partly is a function of where funding streams come from, et cetera. But you see a lot of that today.
And we're seeing that among politicians, too, as well. Just the very simple reality that it costs millions and millions of dollars to run for political office and who has the money, the corporations.
Right.
I'm wondering if that's a concern for you with the Center for American Progress. How do you avoid ending up beholden to corporate donors? A lot of people, for example, say that the DLC has turned into a front group for corporate interests.
Well, you know, to date, we've accepted no money from corporations, so that makes it pretty easy. We've gotten most of our support and our resources from wealthy progressives who I think really are stunned by the radical direction that this administration has taken the country, particularly on the national security front. Which is what we've been here in Washington talking about over the last 2 days with really a dynamite group of speakers. I know, Tom, you've been here covering it.
Oh, yeah, it's been great.
But I think that in the long term, I think one of the traps people fall into is taking corporate money that's aimed at particular projects. I think that's unsustainable. I think you end up becoming worried about your income flow, and I think we just have a policy of not doing that.
That's marvelous. I'm impressed.
Hopefully we're not quite there yet. We've gotten because of some of the publicity the center's gotten, we've gotten contributions from individuals. We hope to really be able to explore the ability to kind of fund many of our activities, so we don't have that shackle around our ankle, which in the end of the day we will not accept. But if we can get more individual donations, which we'll probably try to do over the web over the course of time, we think that that's the soundest way to say we're free of those special interest influence. We can have an honest voice, real analysis, put the hard facts where they may. Sometimes we might be controversial. Sometimes we may disagree with political elements from the center to the left, but sure. We're going to call them like we see them and be honest about it.
That's marvelous. We've got about a minute and a half left here in the time that you can spend with us, and I'm wondering very briefly what you saw as the high points of this conference. What were the carry home messages?
Well, the interesting thing was that you had a broad range of people who have been involved from the Kennedy administration. From the Kennedy administration up and through the current sitting members of Congress, including Republicans, Senator Chuck Hagel, Congressman Jim Leach, and Senator Biden, Senator Hillary Clinton, who all agreed that this unilateral policy, this policy of destroying our alliances, of not trying to move towards collective security, was actually weakening our country,
right.
And that we needed to get back to a bipartisan consensus in the middle that said that we needed to work with our allies on the common problems that we face in the world today. And that was especially given the fact that there was so much agreement by these professionals, by military people, by people who have served in the State and Defense Department, and by a bipartisan group from Congress. Mm-hmm. That was a very, very interesting and important development, I think.
Yeah, I found some fascinating conversations, and just the whole thing worked really, really well. John Podesta, President and Chief Executive Officer of the Center for American Progress. Our guest this segment here on the IE America Radio Network. This is Tom Hartman. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Does Burger King have a new fire-grilled chicken baguette sandwich waiting for you? Unfortunately, no. Each one is freshly made to order without waiting for anyone. Like our Santa Fe chicken baguette with juicy fire-grilled chicken, fire-roasted peppers and onions, and a hearty fire-roasted tomato sauce on a fresh-baked baguette, all with only 5 grams of fat. Order your own Santa Fe chicken baguette from Burger King. Come on over. The fire's ready. Not a low-sodium food. For complete nutritional info, visit BurgerKing.com.
Hey, Sneezy, go to sleep.
I can't.
You could if you take NyQuil. It'll help your symptoms. So you'll sleep great. You know, like you do when you cuddle on the couch with a warm fleece blanket, a cozy fire, and a chick flick.
Now that's my kind of sleep.
Mm-hmm.
Give me that.
NyQuil, the nighttime sniffling, sneezing, coughing, aching, stuffy head, fever, best sleep you ever got with a cold medicine. Use as directed. Now try new and improved Liquicaps.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The Founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection, The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hartman.
If you're looking for the latest in cutting-edge technology and the products that everyone is talking about, tune into tomorrow right here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Pacific. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the highly interactive radio program with experts featuring the latest in consumer electronics, technology, computers, and the Internet. We cover all things cool, like digital photography and video, home theater and audio, home automation, gadgets and gizmos, the technology of making music, computer peripherals, HDTV, DVD, MP3s, car audio, navigation and security, and lots more. If it draws current, we talk about it. Let us bring you into tomorrow. Check out our website anytime at graveline.com and join us this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific, here on the IE America Radio Network.
See the
look on Nancy's face.
What's she doing?
I asked her if she wanted a boogie, and she just gave me this condescending sneer.
Is it the condescending, I don't boogie?
How would I keep up with her?
Right.
Boogieing.
Nancy can boogie. Yeah. Doug, I've never seen you dance.
Kind of looks like a frog in a blender.
I could dance with you till the cows come home. On second thought, I'd rather dance with the cows when you come home.
On the IE America Radio Network.
Who says Mike Malloy is rational and, you know, I mean, whatever.
You want me fired, too?
I mean, I hate the guy. And
you hate me?
True.
You hate me?
Why don't
me?
Get something on that says he's a great goof liberal?
Goof?
Yeah, I just can't believe it.
The Mike Malloy Show, weekdays from 9 p.m. till midnight, Eastern Time, on IE America Radio Network.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
Three chicks came from Texas with a banjo and guitar and a fiddle that could make you cry or set your soul on fire. Their mamas taught them to speak up about what they thought was true, and they thought their country gave that right to them and me and you. Now one night back in England, one of these babes brought up a beef about how she wasn't too bewitched with her commander-in-chief. Some folks did not appreciate how she denounced their man. These patriots rolled up their sleeves and took matters in hand.
Let's meet all the Dixie chicks. We're too nice to use rocks and sticks. So let's demolish their CDs with a bulldozer or whatever you please.
If this reminds you a little bit of bonfires in Berlin, well, cowboy, that just goes to prove it can always happen again.
And welcome back. It's Tom Hartman on IE America Radio Network. I believe that was from Blue Canyon Productions, Jim Turr. I hope I'm right on that. Jim does some of the most creative stuff out there, and BlueCanyonProductions.com is a website where you'll find all sorts of funny and interesting stuff. Welcome back to our program. John Podesta had to run. The conference is over, and he was flying out of here with a couple of people. He's got to get back to the office and get a zillion things done. We do have a couple of callers, though, and perhaps I can answer your questions, or we can just discuss this stuff. Is it Jerry in North Carolina or Chuck in West Virginia? Sure, I've lost track. It's Chuck in West Virginia is the first on the line. Chuck, thanks for calling 1-800-TALK. Yes, how are you today?
Pretty good, Tom. Hey, I wanted to first, I had two questions for John. Didn't get to ask them. You hopefully will be able to answer them. Where do we need to go to check out and maybe donate to this group as personal person? And also, what do you think the effect of 9/11 had on the midterm elections? I believe that they, because everybody became news junkies after 9/11, as I did myself and a lot of people I knew, turned to AM radio, and then they got, you know what they got, Rush Limbaugh, Hannity, and the likes in most of the country. And that swayed the midterm elections to make everybody think that, oh, gosh, everybody's turned into Republican now.
Yeah. Yeah, well, absolutely. First of all, to find, Chuck, to find the Center for American Progress, just go to www.americanprogress.org. And that's easy to think about, you know, America maybe having some progress for a change. What a revolutionary idea. And the daily talking points memo, or whatever you want to call it, that they put together is called the Daily Progress Report. And it's a very easy to navigate website, a very well done website. I don't know, you know, in terms of contributions, I don't know what they take, how they take it, what they solicit. I think that they've been funded by some by a few folks with fairly deep pockets, but I'm sure that they'll be looking for some help. I just don't know the dynamics of that.
I haven't settled on a candidate yet. I'd rather give to them than right now than. But until I really settled on one of the Democratic candidates, you know.
Yeah, the thing that impressed me, I'm so concerned about the Democratic Leadership Council being corporate funded and proud of it. And what really impressed me was to hear John Podesta, the president of this whole thing, answer the question that I was frankly almost afraid to ask, which is, do you guys intend to get in bed with corporations too? And he was unequivocal in his saying no, which really pleased me. I was so very pleased to hear that. Although they are trying to be not a partisan organization. This isn't a front for the Democratic Party. In fact, there have been some considerable criticism of Democratic policies and Democrats here. I think that they're just trying to say, you know, this is what it's about. What was your second question? I'm sorry.
About the actual effect. I never have seen any numbers or been able to compile any. I'd like to know where I could go to do the research and find them. The actual ratings hype or increase after 9/11 to AM radio listeners, for the most part, you know, in most parts of the country, it's mainly Hannity, Rush, you know, O'Reilly, Liddy, whatever.
Yeah.
I'd like to see what the ratings hike was and what effect that could have played on the midterm election.
Well,
actually,
if you want to
educate people to go, listen, this is, you know, you didn't pay attention to politics until 9/11, then all of a sudden, bam, you start paying attention because of 9/11, and you got all these people out there that are going, hey, you know what? These ideas sound great, and I think that the Democrats kind of missed out on that.
Yeah, I got it, Chuck. The music means we're at the end here. I would suggest you go to Talkers Magazine, talkers.com on the web, www.talkers.com. They actually compile those kind of stats, and they may know. Drop them an email and ask them. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network, helping defend America from the conservative weapons of mass deception. We'll be right back.
What does corporate power have to do with disarmament? How does working for racial justice affect trade agreements? And what do they all have to do with the Cuban blockade? Having trouble making a connection? It's our specialty. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, for 88 years, connecting the issues for democracy and social justice. Why don't you connect with us? WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
Scientists say we should learn from history before we go all out with hydrogen. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. Fuel cells that use hydrogen produce electricity and emit only water. If hydrogen fuel cells replace the internal combustion engine, they could eliminate problems with smog and oil spills. But some people say we need to examine all the impacts of this fuel before we start using it. Tracy Tromp is a physicist at the California Institute of Technology. She's the lead author of a study in the journal Science about the potential impact of a hydrogen economy on the environment. Tromp says hydrogen could leak out during fueling, storage, or any other point along the way. She says too much of this loose gas could disrupt the recovery of the Earth's protective ozone layer. Tromp says this is not a reason to dismiss the idea of using hydrogen-powered fuel cells.
We're not advocating scrapping hydrogen fuel cells. We think they're a great idea. But we're at a unique position at this point in time. The hydrogen fuel cells are a technology that's currently under development. We're not set down any particular technology path. So what we're hoping is to force a dialogue to start thinking about the environment and which of these technologies are most environmentally friendly.
Tromp says that if we can anticipate problems, we can work to avoid them. She says that did not happen before modern economies were built on a foundation of fossil fuel. The consequences included air pollution and widespread emissions of greenhouse gases. Tromp says people are working to better understand how hydrogen behaves in the environment. She says that information is critical to predicting and monitoring the impact of hydrogen fuel cells as a common source of energy. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
My fellow Americans, this is Laura Picklesbush with a helpful hint to resist the wicked and shameful addiction that causes some of our otherwise mentally healthy citizens to tune into the Mike Malloy Show weeknights at 9 p.m. Eastern Time. I suggest that you recovering Malloy listeners spend these 3 hours simply standing in your yards, saluting the flags on your houses, apartments, or trailers, or whatever you little people live in. This is Laura Picklesbush saying, when it comes to the Mike Malloy Show, just say no.
Do the Republicans or the Democrats have a clear vision for America that actually includes democracy, fairness, and justice? Do the Greens or the Progressives? How can we create a shared vision of the kind of future we want for our children? This is Tom Hartman, and I'll be exploring these and many other issues with guests from a wide variety of viewpoints, as well as taking your calls.
The Tom Hartman Show, 12 p.m. till 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
The best of the rest of the news. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
So if you ever get a notion to state what's on your mind, make sure it's something flattering or at least extremely kind, or you'll find your controversy quotient's completely out of hand. Though you might improve your record sales and the quality of your fans.
Let's beat on the Dixie Chicks. We're too nice to use rocks and sticks. So let's demolish their CDs with a bulldozer or whatever you please.
If this reminds you a little bit of bonfires in Berlin. Well, cowboy, that just goes to prove we can get you once again.
Yes, indeed. Yeah, welcome back. It's Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Truth and integrity in broadcasting. Broadcasting from the good old working class stainless steel microphone here on location at the New American Strategies for Security and Peace Conference in Washington, D.C., co-sponsored by the Center for American Progress. And we just had on John Podesta, our guest. I just found my notes from the breakfast we had with Clillery Hinton. Oh, boy. You can tell it's been a long day. With Hillary Clinton this morning. And comments from Zbigniew Brzezinski last night. And I'll share those with you right after we take a call here. Tim in Hartford, Connecticut has been patiently waiting. Tim, thanks for calling 1-800-TALK. Yes, how are you today?
Good. There I am, Tom. Pretty good, thank you. You know, I think
great.
You're one of the few people who's been on, what, both the Heritage Foundation people and this new Center for American Progress. And
yeah.
that's pretty unique, I guess.
I guess.
At this point, but because I'm just sitting here, kind of sitting back and wondering about this new liberal think tank.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess it started about 2 weeks ago. I saw Newt Gingrich on the fake news channel. You know, ones
faux
where they
news.
Make up the stuff. Yes, the faux
yeah,
news
faux
channel.
News.
And what's really good about them is that they put up Newt, and then they start running underneath him all the different think tanks, and let's be honest, what they are is people who pay Newt to be
right.
on different boards and to be whatever, and
yep.
they started running Heritage, this, that, you know, and I consider myself a political junkie, but after about 20 of these, you know, senior fellows for this, you know, senior this with that and stuff, you're just going, huh? You know, it's just, who's paying this guy, and what is
well,
he, you know?
You also have to consider the psychology of Newt, Tim. Newt was my congressman for like 15 years.
Uh-huh.
I lived in the northern Atlanta suburbs in Roswell, Georgia, up until about 8 years ago when we moved up to Vermont. I could tell you stories about how Newt ran his campaigns. A good friend of mine is a county commissioner there in Cobb County, and you know, I've seen it from the inside. But you have to understand the psychology of Newt Gingrich. He is, in my opinion, and of course I've never met him, and even though I'm on the roster of psychotherapists with the state of Vermont, and so I can claim some ability to diagnose people legally, please don't take this as a diagnosis, but all my, you know, my sense of him, and I saw him so up front and personal, heard him speak in person and whatnot in the time that I lived there and he represented me, was that he is one of the more profoundly insecure individuals in public service, that he desperately, desperately wants approval and affection from other people, particularly approval. He is just desperate for approval. He's constantly trying. And so I think that probably three-quarters of those titles that you saw on there were things that he asked for because he wants to impress people. And his whole thing with being Speaker of the House and, you know, his
as picking on Colin Powell. And when you look at, I mean, there is a doctrine that he believes in part, and then there is the part of him that has sold out to get access to money and power. And frankly, I think the part that has sold out is the part that is being driven by this deep psychological need, this frantic, frenetic need. I mean, you know, look at the multiple wives and the affairs and everything else that he's been through for approval. I think he's frankly, a very damaged human being.
Well,
and you have to take that into account.
You know, when I was just watching this, seeing all the think tanks and different associations that he's essentially fronting for, and you know, I'm hearing about this conference, and I look on it, and your Center for American Progress, and you were saying, as I was calling up, that that this is not going to be a front group for the Democratic Party.
Right.
And I think that the Heritage people would probably say, oh, no, we're not a front group for the Republican Party.
Well, in fact, they're not. They often right now, the Heritage Foundation has several position papers out that are making the Republicans crazy.
Well,
with
their own
agenda,
as far as, you know, trying to, battle Bush, and obviously Bush is, you know, the Bush policy of, you know, do whatever it takes to get reelected, whatever that may be, you know, against conservative thought and everything like that. And I'm just kind of questioning where on the website can I go to see this Center for American Progress? It seems to be loaded up with a lot of Clinton people, you know, criticizing the Democrats in a serious, different than Dean says this, Gephardt says this, slightly different. I've been doing a little cruising on there, and I see almost no criticism of the Democratic Party.
Yeah. I think that what you're going to find, the Heritage Foundation, in my experience, and you know, you've listened to this program enough, I've had people on from the Heritage Foundation, and I was on that talk show, you know, I was the lone liberal on the talk show panel, that, you know, I got beat up there a couple of weeks ago. And I think that they are really ideologically driven. I think the Cato Institute also, the libertarian think tank, is ideologically driven.
Sure.
I think the front groups are the Center for American, what do they call it? No, it's not. It's the Center for, I had it on the tip of my tongue.
You're not talking about Horowitz's deal, are you?
No, it's it'll come to me when I'm not trying to think of it. But anyhow, there's two of them out there, basically. One guy named, I think his name is Cliff May. He's always on TV, and he's from the American Enterprise Institute.
Sorry,
that's the one I was thinking of. And there's the American Enterprise Institute, and then there's one about something like American Freedom or whatever. And they're basically just corporate shills.
Right.
Plain and simple corporate shills. But I think the Heritage actually has an underlying ideology, as Cato obviously does. My sense of it is that the Podesta's group also has an underlying ideology. It might not be as far to the left as you or I are, but it is farther to the left, I think, than a lot of the folks who have been participating in it.
But, and you know, I've been hearing Hillary Clark is a person, so are they, you know, well, a pro-NAFTA group. I mean, you know, where they stand on some of these kinds of issues would be, you know, pretty helpful, whether I would have any interest in even listening to, you know, their spin on things. And I'm a little concerned about, the main thing is that they're trying to rush people to, you know, cable news and talk radio to say, as I am interpreting it, here's the Democratic spin. You know, and, you know, I think they just need to be a little more honest, and I would have a little more respect for them, I think, right now.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's just saying, here's the Democratic point of view, and maybe that's needed.
Yeah.
But I don't know whether
that's
needed better and under a party structure than trying to say, well, we're nonpartisan.
Well, see, the Democrats are starting to do this now, too. If you go to the democrats.org, I believe, is the Democrat website, you can register. And they send out, I get them regularly, their position papers on things. And some of them are actually surprisingly hard-hitting, but they're always partisan. You know, they're kicking Republicans and promoting Democrats. And so, and it's nice to see that after all this time, because they're finally, you know, Terry McAuliffe is finally starting to get his act together. But, you know, I see this as a good start. And
are they involved with your news?
With our news?
Yeah,
no. Our news is produced, the news here on IE America Radio Network at the top of the hour is produced by Take Back the Media, which is an independent group. I think it's just a couple of people, Don Waller and his partner out in California, whose name escapes me at the moment. And a relatively small organization, and they've been working for some years. They've got this website, takebackthemedia.com.
Yeah, I've seen it, and I, you know, certainly like, you know, some of the agenda items, but at the same time, you know, I don't really want Democratic or Republican news.
I don't think Take Back the Media are Democrats.
Pardon me?
You know, I don't think the Take Back the Media folks would identify themselves as Democrats. I think that they're trying to emphasize the news that they think would be of interest to progressives. But, you know, if you go to their website, takebackthemedia.com, and I'm sure there's an email link in there, pop them a note, ask them.
Perhaps we can, you know, have a future, you know, discussion about that on your show or some other shows on your network, because it's just, you know, I'm listening to the news and I'm going, that's good slant.
Yeah.
But I don't know whether that's news, and that, you know, maybe I'm, you know, wishful thinking out there and stuff, and I certainly think that there needs to be a clear agenda out there, and I'm very critical, as you know, of the Republican news and many of these kinds of, you know, the Foxes and all that stuff.
Speaking as someone who was a news reporter for 7 years on radio, and that was back in the days when we actually went out, found our stories, wrote our stories, and read our own stories on the air. And got our own audio and produced it and spliced together tape with razor blades and that funny little tape stuff that they had. I can tell you that there is almost no such thing as news.
I agree. It's good talking to you, Tom.
There is always a perspective. There is always a perspective. Thanks, Tim. I appreciate the call. I'm not sure if our IM is still working there, Shara. Any other callers on, or do we have time for a rant here? Shara? No calls. Okay, cool. And if you would like to call, of course, you're welcome to 1-800-TALK-YES. But let me tell you what Hillary Clinton said this morning. I thought this was interesting. I've never heard her speak in person. And it was not one of these, you know, she gave a speech, it must have been 6 months ago or so to some group, and got rather shrill at some point in it. And I remember driving home from someplace and listening to Sean Hannity play this one part where she was speaking in a real shrill tone of voice, playing it over and over and over and cackling about it. And it was one of the sadder moments, I think, for talk radio, you know, the juvenile behavior on the part of a talk show host. But this presentation was very straightforward, very reasoned, very, very thoughtful, and very to the point. She said that the core democratic principles, that is, the core principles that define not the Democratic Party, but a democracy, are the rule of law, transparency, and accountability. Now, I would add to that an adversarial process. That is, anybody, regardless of their opinion, gets to participate. And she did actually at one point say, and we want to see the will of the majority with the rights of the minorities protected. Speaking of Iraq, of democracy in Iraq, which was the focus of her talk. So anyhow, the rule of law, transparency, and accountable, both abroad and at home. And she said that the actions of the Bush administration, this is a quote, the actions of the Bush administration undermine these principles, both here at home and overseas, because as people overseas see us undermining our own civil liberties, undermining the rule of law, making our government less transparent and less accountable, and more, you know, living in this bubble, this vacuum, and you know, for example, Bush refusing to give out information to the 9/11 Commission about his own daily briefings. I mean, they just want to see the daily briefings that the president got. Well, he doesn't want to give it to them. Why? It's going to be politically embarrassing, because he was warned that it was going to happen. He had John Ashcroft flying on chartered jets because of a quote threat assessment. They, you know, they had a good, solid sense that this thing was coming down the road. Anyhow, so the Bush administration covering up 9/11, covering up the Cheney energy meetings and all these kinds of things. So this lack of transparency, this ignoring the rule of law, outing a CIA agent. This is treasonous behavior. We have a traitor in the White House. There is somebody in the White House who has committed a greater crime many would suggest, than Ethel and Julius Rosenberg, who went to the electric chair, committed. This is treason. And what does George W. have to say about it, about the fact that somebody in his White House committed treason?
And I don't know if we're going to find out. The senior administration official. Now, this is a large administration, and there's a lot of senior officials.
Yeah, right. I don't know. I don't know. And so... So what happens is, and the rule of law, transparency, and accountability, people around the world are looking at the United States, and they're going, oh, that's how you do it. That's what democracy looks like. You lie to your people. You refuse to be accountable. You don't be transparent. You abuse power. If you don't like what the Constitution says, you declare an emergency and overturn it. And so Hillary, I mean, I'm not quoting from her speech now, I'm ranting about her speech, but her point was, she said, here's some quotes. The actions of the Bush administration are undermining these being the rule of law, transparency, and accountability, both abroad and at home. She said, we can't just preach the habits of democracy, we have to model them. And this is so essential. And here, this is a really good one. She said, proclaiming the evil of our adversaries is not a strategy. I mean, this really does seem to be the Bush administration strategy. Oh, they're evil. You're either with us or against us. You're either good or you're evil. And those folks are evil. So we're going to get them. That is not a strategy, folks. That's a slogan. And Hillary went after these guys and their sloganeering mercilessly this morning. It was so nice to hear. And last night, Zbigniew Brzezinski, just to wrap this up, he said, there is no such thing as a war on terrorism. That's like saying World War II was a war on blitzkrieg. Terrorism is a technique, a military technology. It is not an enemy. This is a war against Al-Qaeda. If you want to go after the people who attacked 9/11, and we need to stop calling it a war on terrorism. It's like saying this is a war against airplanes, or this is a war against missiles. No, sorry. There's an actual enemy out there, or there's somebody out there who perceives us as the enemy, and they are growing all the time because instead of doing the things that they're doing, supporting religious schools, supporting hungry people, doing the basic stuff that our religions tell us to do, feed the hungry, care for the poor. Instead of doing that around the world, we're going after these folks with guns and bombs and things. And, there's some of them, those who are armed, they've entered that arena, and that's how we have to respond. But there are so many that are sitting on the fence in the Islamic world, and we need to be reaching out to them now. That was one of the main messages I got from this conference. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Stay tuned. We'll be back in just a moment.
To create a real democracy in this country, we need to sit down and talk with other people. Democracy begins with conversation. But how do we begin the conversation? The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom has a 10-week study guide called Challenge Corporate Power, Assert the People's Rights, to help you get the conversation started in your community. It's free on the web at WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
Welcome to Baguette Country. Introducing the Santa Fe Fire Grilled Chicken Baguette Sandwich from Burger King. A juicy breast of fire grilled chicken, sweet peppers and onions, and a hearty fire roasted tomato sauce on our new fresh baked bread. Made to order with only 5 grams of fat. The new Santa Fe Chicken Baguette. Burger King. Come on over. The fire's ready. Not a low sodium food. For complete nutritional info, visit BurgerKing.com.
If you think people are more important than corporations, you need to see The Progressive Populist. Twice a month, we feature columnists such as Jim Hightower, Molly Ivins, and other plutocrat pluckers from around the country. We'll send you a free sample copy if you'll call us toll-free 1-800-205-7067 or see our website at populist.com. That's 1-800-205-7067 or populist.com or The Progressive Populist, the newspaper for Main Street USA.
Excuse me, ma'am.
Yeah?
Have you bought your Halloween candy yet?
Not yet.
Well, I've got the best candy idea for you to give away on Halloween.
Really?
Juicy gummies.
Juicy gummies?
That's right. Juicy gummies are the first gummies made with real fruit juices. They're fat-free and they are so good.
Mmm.
You have to try them all. The peach rings, froggies, creepies, and much, much more. They're all delicious.
Yeah, they are.
Juicy gummies come in playful packages, fun shapes and colors. All the kids will be at your door when the word gets out that you're giving away juicy gummies on Halloween.
Hmm.
Juicy gummies come in 30 and 50 pack bags, so there's plenty of candy for the whole neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
And did I mention that these gummy candies are actually made with real fruit juices and fat-free?
Wow.
So if you haven't bought your candy for Halloween, rush on out to Walmart, Kmart, Eckerd's, Dollar General, 7-Eleven, Fred's, Kerr Drugs, Brooks Pharmacy, and many other stores nationwide. Sorry, ma'am, you can't eat all of our samples. Well, this store here sells juicy gummies.
Ooh, thanks.
Look for Juicy Gummies, America's first gummy made with real fruit juices. Boy, they're delicious.
The Mike Molloy Show.
Apparently, Simple Scotty missed the memo from Bush stating that everybody had to stop trying to link Saddam to 9-1-1.
The most dangerous threat we face in a post-September 11th world is the nexus between outlaw regimes with weapons of mass destruction and terrorists. Saddam Hussein had a history of weapons of mass destruction.
Maybe before you were born, you little jackass. Did Scotty not get the memo? There is no connection between 9/11 and Saddam. It came out of the Bush bastard's own mouth. It's come out of all their mouths. Condi Rice, Dick Cheney, Colin Powell, all of them. Scotty, hello.
The Mike Molloy Show, Monday through Friday from 9 p.m. till midnight Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
My fellow Americans, this is Laura Pickles Bush. Some of our weaker citizens suffer an addiction to talk radio that causes them to listen to that Mike Molloy person each night from 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern Time. We suggest you satisfy your Jones by listening to some of our morally upstanding, honest, and ethical talk show hosts like Dr. Laura, G. Gordon Liddy, Oliver North, and Rush Limbaugh. This is Laura Pickles Bush saying, when it comes to the Mike Molloy Show, just say no.
For the latest in cutting-edge technology, computers, entertainment, and much more, tune into tomorrow here on the IE America Radio Network, 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time every Sunday. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the interactive radio program with experts featuring new technology and the latest consumer electronics. Check out our internet site anytime at graveline.com. And join us this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific, right here on the IE America Radio Network.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back. It's Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Our program today produced by Louise Hartman in Vermont, by Joe McPherson in Atlanta, Georgia, and engineered in Detroit by Shar Jones and Steph Stryker. Let you know that. Bob in South Carolina has some thoughts or a question or comments. Bob, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program.
How you doing, Tom?
Hey, I'm great, Bob. How about you?
Good. Tom, I was buying a carton of milk in a convenience store last night, and it had a picture of the Democratic Party on the side of it.
Is that a joke?
Yes. What's happened?
Okay.
Where are they? I thought this was a two-party country.
Yeah, well, they're trying their best.
One of the questions I was hoping you'd ask Podesta is, why are they continuing to roll over?
Well, they're not. I mean, if
every issue.
Oh, you mean legislatively?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree. I think that if the Democrats were to launch a serious offensive, you know, really go on the offense, as the Republicans did under Newt. I mean, that was the whole thing. They were in a minority position, and Newt came out with his contract on America, and they just said, this is it, guys. We have a vision. We have a philosophy, and we're going to go after this thing. We're going to go after it, no holds barred, and we're not going to play any games, and we're going to make it happen, damn it, in our lifetimes. And the Democrats need to be doing the same thing. I think one of the problems is that nobody has been articulating individually or collectively. Nobody has stepped forward and articulated a really clear philosophy. There's a whole lot of people who have a lot of policy statements. But there's go ahead.
It used to be the way my parents raised me is you grow up and you do things that you believe in. And you don't really care what anybody else's opinion is. If it's the right thing to do, it's the right thing to do. And these guys are up there, they're moralizing one side or the other, waffling on every issue, and they've become patsies. We're no longer a two-party nation.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I to some extent, I agree with you, and I've been very disappointed over the last basically about the last 8 or 9 years of the Democratic Party, their unwillingness to stand up to the Republicans. Good point, Bob. Thanks for the call. I appreciate it. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. An interesting program today here, broadcasting live from the conference put on by the Center for American Progress. Tomorrow I'll be back home, broadcasting to you from the Green Mountains of Vermont, the People's Republic there. Tune in, same time, same place. See you tomorrow.
Tiananmen Square. It's coming from a field that this ain't exactly real, or it's real but it ain't exactly there. From the war against disorder, from the sirens night and day, from the fires of the...
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Copyright 2003.
My fellow Americans, this is Laura Pickles Bush. It seems some of you are still listening to that Mike Malloy person at 9 p.m. Eastern Time every weeknight. Many chronic Malloy listeners have found it helpful to repeatedly snap a little rubber band against the soft flesh of their wrists when they feel the un-American urge to turn on the Mike Malloy Show. The pain is only temporary, but it is nothing compared to the everlasting furnaces of brimstone hell you will experience if you continue listening to the Mike Malloy Show. This is Laura Pickles Bush saying, when it comes to the Mike Malloy Show, just say no.
You've got your green alligators and long-necked geese, humpty-back camels and some chimpanzees, some cats and rats and elephants, but sure as you're born, don't you forget that unicorn.
Sunday nights, please, please listen to our show, because if you don't, Mark will not stop singing. Animal Talk, Sunday nights, on the IE America Radio Network.